Blog Talk Radio.
Our life to this sport. We do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We you know, we have attitude. We're moody, and we want that fight to land on the line.
Boxing fans, this is the Rope-A-Dope Radio Podcast. I am your host, Chris Carlson. We are live on a Tuesday night. Hope everybody's doing okay. I know I am. A little helter-skelter today. Looking like it's going to rain again, but it hit 82 degrees yesterday. I know, you know, some folks in the South is like, really, dude? But 82 degrees in April is a big deal up here in Minnesota. It's so funny. A lot of... not a lot, but I heard some folks, those up north Minnesota folks, saying, geez, it's hot up here, the humidity. Don't start talking about the humidity until July, okay? Just be happy. It's not snowing. Anyway, enough about me. Let's talk about what we have to talk about. And there is a lot to talk about. We usually like to start in the ring, and there was plenty of action. All over the world, really, on ESPN Plus and DAZN, lots of different stuff. Tim Tszyu scored a knockout, as did Jamel Herring. MJ Akhmadaliev, he scored a knockout. Madrimov, we'll talk a little bit about him. Some folks are kind of all over the place now on him when he, you know, a fair amount of folks were talking about, like, man, once he works his way up the division, then it will be deep and he'll take it over. We'll see. Still a prospect. I guess you could put him on the fringe contender right now, to be fair, but interesting. Lots to talk about from the weekend. We'll recap that. We'll also look towards this weekend, and there's some interesting fights. Joe Smith Jr. and Maxim Vlasov finally fight. They've been talking about this fight. There was a – was this a COVID? I think this was a COVID. Vlasov got COVID, I believe. Oh, wait, maybe it was Joe Smith. Man, I can't remember. I think it was Vlasov. So it'll be interesting to see. Was that February? Sometimes on these quicker turnarounds, we've seen that issue pop up. But Joe Smith Jr. returns. As does Conor Benn, a rising prospect against Samuel Vargas, ESPN and DAZN there. And then Showtime has a great triple header, but really the top two fights are what I'm interested in. Ennis, Boots Ennis and Lipinets, Sergey Lipinets and Jaron Ennis. It's a really good step-up fight for him. I'm happy that he's getting this opportunity to do his thing. And if he can look good against Lipinets, that'll go a long way. And then Stanonius against Delorme, which is another step-up fight. Stanonius has been showing more and more of late. Sometimes he's a little bit raw, just trying to knock you out. Other times he brings some skill into the ring, not just trying to murk you. He's been kind of up and down as a prospect. I think he's kind of settled in more, though. And it does seem like he's finding his groove. We'll see if that groove keeps going this weekend. So there is a fair amount of fights, you know, coming up. Obviously, you know, there are other items, news items to talk about. We talk about Tim Tszyu. Well, Tim Tszyu, his handlers, maybe I should say, you know, they're talking about some kind of big money that they're willing to put out there to try to get one of these, you know, one of these champions, whether it's Castaño or Charlo, that's the two champions really at the 54-pound division, trying to, you know, put out some big money to get the title fight in Australia. So I don't know if that's legit at this point. We do know a fair amount of money was given to Pacquiao to go over there, Horn. But Pacquiao, and you know, it's a little different scenario. Not that Jeff Horn had this huge fan base either, though. So, you know, it looked like a nice audience, that's for sure, in his fight this weekend. Ryan Garcia and Javier Fortuna is a done deal. We'll give you a little bit more about that. Couple of Showtime bouts that are rumored to take place. They're not officially announced, but they are going to take place. A couple of them are really, really good. One of them was a fight that was supposed to happen last December, and it was actually a double COVID thing. Both fighters got COVID. So kind of glad that it's not going to be till May, so that gives a lot of time to be on your best, behavior, but best, you know, the best of you, per se. But who knows? You know, maybe we don't know how serious of a case it was. Povetkin, a lot of people use that as an example, but we can't use that fully as an example because it sounded like Povetkin really had it kind of bad. Like he went to the hospital and stuff like that, which is different than just having the symptoms or having a couple of days where you don't really feel all that good or, you know, you're kind of feeling really bad. So we'll talk a little bit about that. Eddie Hearn had some comments over the weekend about how he's going to take over the world. Now he said a couple of things. Let's put it that way. And he also has a decision to make. You know, what platform, what deal will he sign? Will he stay with Sky Sports? Will he do what a lot of people think he's going to do and just sign with DAZN, especially with the budget and how many pay-per-view fights, you know, go on there. We'll kind of see how that plays out. But he's got a big decision to make. And there's a variety of other items. We'll get to, of course, some current fight news in general in a short segment for our boxing Twitter segment where we expose some fanboys or media members acting like fanboys or just good-ass tweets that are like, yes, if I saw that tweet, I would retweet it. I believe in that tweet or the sentiment of that tweet. We'll get to the recap in just a little bit. But if this is your first time listening to the Ropadope Radio Podcast, welcome. It streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/ropadoperadio. You know, you don't have to go to Blog Talk or Ropadope and download the show directly there or listen to the browser if you don't want to. You can find this platform on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Player FM, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spreaker, really across the board. We're also part of the Grueling True Sports Podcast Network, which can be found almost everywhere. While you're at it, why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.com. It's boxing, football, basketball, baseball, everything in between. And one more thing. If you're thinking about cutting the cord or you're not quite happy, I got something for you. It's called AT&T TV. The plans start as low as $69 a month. It's simple pricing. There's no hidden fees, no annual contracts. You can stream it anywhere on any device. They do have the cloud DVR available. Right now, Showtime's $11, boxing fans. And they have this choice package, right? If you sign up for it, you get a free year of HBO Max, plus for a limited time, the NBA League Pass Premium. I don't know. It's a limited time. So I don't know how long that's going to go there, but NBA League Pass Premium, HBO Max, Choice Package, that's AT&T TV. Okay, so there's a variety of ways to look at this weekend. There's some very positive. If you look at Tim Tim Tszyu, and how he took care of business against Dennis Hogan. At times, he was kind of rough and rugged and wide swinging. Other times, though, he was, you know, working the body and the head. He was landing big shots and ultimately got him out of there TKO style. But there was a, you know, really flush uppercut that kind of changed. Well, I shouldn't say changed the whole fight, but that caused the knockdown. Hogan had his moments, but you did kind of see, like in the fourth round, although he had little moments, he was also holding on a lot and kind of went into survival mode. But, you know, Kim Zhu looking good. Definitely rising the ranks at 154, as it is Herring, not at 54. But Herring got a nice win over Carl Frampton. Not surprised at the win, but, you know, on the surface, a little surprised about the stoppage and how quickly it came. I thought Frampton could maybe go into survival mode. Of course, 130 is a little bit tougher for him, you know. The size was always going to be an issue. But Herring's jab, you know, some of the fundamentals that he stayed with throughout most of the fight, I thought was fairly impressive. You know, his left hands to the body. He did get cut. I wonder how long that's going to, you know, hurt him. But he landed a great left hand in an exchange. And like I said, the corner threw in the towel. And then he also had MJ. MJ's been out since, I think, January 2020, which is a long time. Akhmadaliev, I think that's what it is. God, I have a problem saying that in individual thing there. Akhmadaliev, MJ, that's why I kind of stated MJ. And Iwasa, he looked good in that fight, especially considering how long he was off. I thought he looked pretty good in the fight. He was very, very aggressive. He was landing a really hard left hand. Sometimes, especially early, in the early rounds, especially the first round, he was reaching too much, getting a little wide with his left hands especially. But he was landing some you know, looping left hands as well, some short, quick hooks, whereas Iwasa was basically landing some jabs, but a few nice uppercuts. You know, there was times where he flipped it and put some pressure on, but it was mostly pressure from MJ, either a jab, you know, left hand or a lead left hand. He looked pretty damn good. And you could see in the fifth round, he came out on fire, you know, really looking for the stoppage. There was some moments where Iwasa actually pushed back, you know, and was able to push him back. But the stoppage was just ridiculous. I mean, that was a bad, it's about as bad, you know. Shouts out to the UK fans and whatnot, but a lot of, you know, the last 10 or 15 years online, a lot of people, even UK folks, will say more than likely they're going to, on average, of course, you know, case by case, but on average, they usually stop fights a little bit earlier. We see a lot of TKOs, and sometimes it takes a little longer in other parts of the country, but especially over here. But that one seemed like one of those classic, really, dude? And I know that wasn't in the UK. It was in his hometown or his home city. But that, you know, I thought MJ didn't lose a round. I don't think he would have. But that one was bad. That one was just like, really, dude? Huh. As far as Madrimas, what was it, Colombo, who he was fighting? You know, I gave Colombo actually the fifth round. It was a close round, though. You did see Madrimov's nose start to bleed. He was busier, but I did like the pressure he was applying on Madrimov and kind of put him on the move a little bit. He was landing decent punches. The thing about Madrimov, you know, he came in with a lot of hype from his amateur pedigree. The last couple of fights, you know, I'm not going to say, oh, he's exposed, but I think we got to give him some time here. You know, I don't mind the level of competition where he's at, and I think it should maybe incrementally, slowly go up. I don't think he should challenge one of the top five guys for at least a couple of fights. He just has so much wasted movement. And by the mid-round, I think it was the fifth or sixth, he looked tired. Now, he got his second win, and that happens. But I don't know. It's like sometimes he gets pressured. Sometimes he puts on the pressure. Sometimes he'll throw, like, a really pretty hook or a cross. And then other times he goes right back to, like, just looping shots that are just missing poorly. And not just looping, but he jumps with his punches. And you're just like, dude, you're really setting yourself up for disaster when you step up like that. And so it's, you know, he does, like I said, the wasted movement, don't get me wrong, not all of it is, but the amount of head movement and upper body movement that he displays, a lot of it is, you're still getting hit, and not just hit, but hit flush against a lower level of competition comparatively what you're going to run into. So, to me, I just think a lot of it has to do with kind of like college football or basketball rankings, where they just kind of, well, we know this, they're producing this great, these great teams, so we're going to put them in a higher ranking, and then week six or seven comes, and they're out of the AP poll, and they don't get ranked in the college football, you know, official poll ranking. So, to me, it's like he's kind of living off of his amateur pedigree as of right now, but I don't want to make it sound like we've already found his ceiling. We could. I'm not going to say that. That's not the point. Yeah, maybe we have, but I just think this whole – and it's funny because a lot of it is like American fans that just so happen to like Usyk and Loma and Golovkin and Kovalev, and it just – it's a pattern. It's a pattern, and sometimes it comes down to race, let's be honest, you know. So, I don't know, man. It's the thing is, 54 is really fun. Now, is the top five talent just, you know, the most talented out of any division top five? No. But it's been really fun to watch the last few years. They've been matching it up. It sounds like Charlo and Castaño are going to, you know, meet for an undisputed. But to me, I see a lot of folks, or not a lot, but too many folks, where they're just like, well, once, you know, Madrimov and this dude and that dude, and there was a guy that just got beat that the folks were saying he was going to run the division. So it only turns into some deep top level of division if Madrimov and Tim Tszyu come up. I actually like, right now, I like Tim Tszyu a little bit more than Madrimov. Don't get me wrong. Like I said, sometimes when he does all that upper body movement, he is getting out of the way of punches. And sometimes he'll throw a punch that just comes off real pretty-like, right? And it's fundamental. It's quick. It looks great. And it lands hard, right? I mean, in his last fight, he knocked the dude out. But, you know, he was getting hit so much. So I'm just saying, pump the brakes. Not everybody can be Lomachenko and fight, you know, the guys he fought and fight two and three or whatever. So, or even Usyk. I mean, Usyk took a little bit longer. Gamboa took a little bit longer. A lot of guys with this pedigree, I just think we got to pump the brakes on him. And right now, Madrimov, to me, I'm not going to sit there and say he's just this ordinary guy or sound like Floyd Mayweather and say he doesn't have special effects. He's straight up and down. But he kind of does have special effects, right? But it's kind of like 1970s special effects. Right now, he's got to update them to where it looks believable, if that makes sense. Because some of the stuff he does, I don't know. It's not like sometimes his work rate is really up there, and other times he's getting tired because he's doing so much movement that's wasteful. I know I've said that a couple times, but anyway, I just think we need to pump the brakes on him, let him develop, you know. And oh, wrong pipe. Sorry. And I just think that we're rushing a lot of these guys. Let them get to 15 or 18 fights. I'm not saying him in general, but You know, even Shakur Stevenson. I mean, you know, he's going to hopefully start stepping up the competition even more, and he doesn't have 20 fights. So it's not like it's got to be, well, he's 3 years out. Now, I'm not saying that, but, you know, let the guy develop a little bit because he needs it. He needs it. If you think he's ready to take over the division right now, that's cool. And maybe you're right. There's always that. But I just don't see it right now. I need to see a little bit more. I think some of these fights, though, just because I'm talking negatively of him or being critical of him, these are the types of fights. Like, he looked better, I think, in this fight than his last fight. Was the opponent better? You know, I don't know. I think we just got to pump the brakes on him a little bit. So, you know, where does Herring go? It'll be kind of interesting to see if he goes to 35, if he does somehow not fight Stevenson, because I know they're buddies or whatever, and maybe he does get the Oscar Valdez. I don't believe he will. Maybe he gets the Valdez fight, but it's not a unification. There's not a grip of money in these fights, so I don't think a lot. I've seen some folks on Boxing Twitter say step aside money for Stevenson. Take $1 million in step aside. I don't know if there's $1 million in step aside for this. You know what I mean? And he's going to be fighting here anyway. He's already got an opponent. He's not going to fight either of these guys next anyway. He's already got an opponent. So that's why, you know, and also Herring's cut. He got cut again. So is he going to need some time there? It'll be interesting. He's a humongous 130-pounder. So he could go to 35. There are some lucrative fights there as well. We'll see how this goes. I'm going to go ahead and bring in John, though, into the fold, a great boxing mind, to see what he thought of this weekend's fights and the coming weekend and all that good stuff. What's going on, John? How are you, man?
Chris, great to be here. Was very interested listening to you break down the weekend and ready to add my own thoughts to that. And as you and I have discussed over a couple of weeks, got a full breakdown of the current state of American professional boxing here, which I think will be an interesting discussion. And I think dovetails into a lot of what you said as getting ready for that segment we're going to do in a little bit, going through, you know, the talent in American professional boxing. It's actually quite deeper than people would probably realize. And I've got a feeling either a lot of people don't realize some of these guys are Americans, the United States of America, thankfully, being a very diverse country, which is definitely one of the strengths of the U.S., or, like you said, maybe even more unfortunately, that for some not very pure reasons, they choose to identify a bit more with some foreign fighters. Not that you can't like who you want for the right reason, to see things like that for the wrong reason. So we'll get to that after we get into a little bit of this this past weekend, what we saw and what we've got coming up. Just to add some things on, you know, some of the fights. You know, the Herring-Frampton fight, Herring did usually the size bit, with weight classes, gets overrated, but Frampton really had made his mark at 122 pounds. He was going up to 130. You know, these to me are both, you know, those are both alphabet weight classes. Herring had fought in a traditional class, lightweight, moved down. Frampton had fought at featherweight, was moving up. What I'm getting to is they were still a good 8 pounds apart from where they've probably been at their best. That's a legitimate weight class jump. So I had been leaning towards Frampton a little bit when that fight got signed, but I changed my pick before the fight to Herring based on the size. Both guys in their mid-30s at this point. They talk about Frampton with more wear and tear, but, you know, Herring had gotten stopped by Shavakov, and he'd pick up the loss before that. I just think this was a relatively rare one where it was just more the size, and Frampton hadn't been throwing enough punches in recent bouts. And we saw that again. He tried to pick it up one round, couldn't do it, just doesn't throw enough. And he was size wise, and Herring did a very nice job of of doing what he needed to do. But these are both class acts. I agree with people saying that. I mean, I like both guys myself. But with that understood, if you're ranking 8 or 9 weight classes, I do think you have to say, you got to call it as it is. Neither of these two guys are ranked to me. If we're ranking 8 or 9, if you're taking away the unnecessary weight classes. And I don't think that speaks well for where Jamal Herring can go from here, other than trying to get a payday. He's 35 years old. It's not going to work out well for him in terms of, you know, if he fights Oscar Valdez, it's not going to work out well. If he tries to, God forbid, he tried to go up and fight somebody. He's talking about going back to lightweight. I mean, there's one real champ at lightweight, and his name's Teofimo Lopez. And we don't need or want to see that. And I don't think we need to want to see him against Shakur Stevenson either. So maybe some good options to make some money, but to me, not very good options competitively. And he better enjoy the Frampton victory at the moment. You know, Akhmadaliev did look good, like you said. Owosa, on the other side of the coin, looked terrible. He looked slow, very slow, and wasn't punching with any authority. Agree with you completely, Chris. The stoppage was too quick, but Owosa just really wasn't showing anything. I don't think it was going to, you know, believe it or not, even though it was stopped relatively early, he might have been able to take a beating and go the distance, but didn't look like a fight he was going to win. So that we had that part of the breakdown, and what else did we have on
What do you think of Akhmadaliev? What do you think of him? Because that Daniel Roman fight was a very competitive fight. I thought he, you know, won the fight, but it was like a 7-5, pretty close fight. And Roman is solid at that weight. I don't know if he's the best guy at that weight. What do you think of him? Because he's obviously in a scenario that isn't really great for him per se because of the platform he's on. Now, you know, he might be making good money, but it does seem like PBC has a bunch of those 122-pounders, so we'll see where his career goes. What do you think of him overall? Because he is obviously hasn't had a bunch of fights, but looks pretty damn good transitioning to pro.
Yeah, I think, well, like you said, Chris, I think you summed it up. He looks good. I did think he edged out Daniel Roman, but that fight was very close, and Roman was really coming on. It would have been a good fight to see a rematch, and apparently that's not going to happen. You know, there really was no more for that for Roman after that with you know, DAZN, and he went
that's
over
right
to PBC. So you know, not going to happen. I think Akhmadaliev looks good. Again, with all the weight classes, things get watered down. I think people lose perspective. In other words, he's good, but when you've got 17 weight classes with a 122, which, you know, he's at the top of a division you don't need when you got featherweight 4 pounds above it. You know, there's spots you can go and find some opponents and, you know, have belts and things like that. And it doesn't mean he's not good, but like you correctly said, I mean, you know, in doing my American breakdown, as we'll get to it, but it is right off the top of my head, and I've got it laid out. You know, yeah, look at who the Americans have at 122. You've got Daniel Roman, Stephen Fulton, Ronnie Rios, Brandon Figueroa, Angelo Leo, Raees Salim. You know, that's a lot of guys. I mean, you know, Akhmadaliev could fight a Ronnie Rios, but is any going to – and that's the type of thing we'll have seen on DAZN. I mean, but is anybody excited about that? I mean, not with some of the other American guys
No.
that we know are out there who have the either the bigger upside or better opponents. And that's the problem you run into in boxing a lot of times nowadays. What is why you don't, you know, with all the politics and the exclusive TV deals, is you know you're not going to get these kind of matchups. We'll probably have Akhmadaliev for a while defending his alphabet belts, you know, maybe against somebody like a Rios and other guys that are being pulled out for overseas. And that's not the type of fights that are really going to excite a lot of American fans, to say the least, if they excite some other people.
Yeah, that's right, because Rahman had a 3-fight deal, and then he just never got re-upped, which is kind of strange because, like you said, the rematch would have been something they could build to. And I know that a lot of it had to do with the coronavirus last year, why he was out so long. It's nice to get him back, and all things considered, he looked good. But yeah, I wonder. I mean, this is a weight class where they can show you the money even more. But Showtime's investing as well, so they may have to go over what Showtime's paying just to get one of them over there. So, you know, now some people will say, well, Eddie has the best one. That may be, but, you know, we do, just because he beat Rahman doesn't mean he's just a top dog. A lot of folks are saying he's a top dog, and he might end up being it if we can make these fights. But, it'll be interesting to see. It'll be interesting to see because, like you said, Rahman was really coming on in that fight down the stretch. And he has this moments of lax in every fight almost, where you're just like, dude, where are you at? What's up? And then all of a sudden, you know, he picks it back up. What'd you think of Madrimov in general? You know, so much hype coming out of the amateurs, and for good reason with this pedigree and where a lot of, you know, fighters are coming out of and whatnot. But what do you think? I mean, he's got a lot of flash in the ring. He's got a lot of movement. Does that all, like, if you stir it all up in the pot, is that going to be a top-level guy at 154 at some point?
No, I don't think so. I'm not all that impressed. You can't say it exclusively, but back going where they were teaching it and the coaches started to teach it because you had that dreadful point scoring system that's out of the amateurs now, but you know, some of the countries had success, you know, when that system was in, and that's where they just counted the punches. And you know, you see a lot of the Cubans, quite a lot of the Ukrainians, a lot of some of the other former Eastern Bloc countries, I'd say, because really, you know, these are, you know, we saw fights from Uzbekistan last weekend. You know, you have a lot of fighters out of Kazakhstan. You know, these are really, you know, Asian areas that are part of the former Soviet Union. So you tend to refer them as Eastern Bloc, former Eastern Bloc, but they're not European areas. Some are in Asia. But again, from that amateur system, when they were doing the punch count and getting to Madrimov, he's one of those guys to me. You know, he's only 5'8", so at that weight, if he's fighting at 154 or if he would even be up at middleweight, you know, he'd have to be, you got to be a pressure fighter at that height, you know, coming forward, putting some pressure on, punching with some power. He wants to do that. What I was referring to is a lot of those guys jump in and out. You know, they were taught, I hit you, you don't hit me. Now, we know in general that's the idea of boxing, but it got extreme with that amateur point system where they just try to jump in, land a shot, then they're jumping out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't stand. They never exchange punches. They're not inside trying to slip punches. He's one of those guys. And at 5'8", at 154 pounds, and you know, if he even ends up at a middleweight 160, that's not going to work. Like you said, it's too much with the extra movement. You start tiring yourself out. You're not setting yourself to put hurt on the other guy. Now, if you want to look at a guy who's made a good adjustment like that, I was discussing this with somebody on Twitter during that Madrimov fight Saturday. You know, Derivai and Chen came from the Ukrainian system. He's not that tall for a middleweight. He has even had quite a few fights at 168 earlier in his pro career. But he he's a very skilled boxer, but he made the adjustments where, you know, he'll stand and do some power punching. You know, he's still skilled, and he's got good power, maybe not tremendous power, but good power. But still, he'll, you know, he will he will stand there, try to land some power shots, try to come forward on you, you know, not all the just jumping in and out all the time and all the wasted movement. So, you know, he's a guy that made an adjustment. I saw Lomachenko at times make that adjustment favorably in the pros, but I see times when he reverts back, and that's what got me picking Lopez for the upset, because that was one I called that when he knew, and that's what happened, when he knew somebody could hurt him, you know, he was back in that amateur, his amateur mode of, you know, I'm not going to hit you if you can hit me. And the guy didn't throw any punches for, you know, the guy didn't throw any punches for six rounds because
right.
The guy could hurt him too. It's the pros. So, you know, when he was faced with a really, really good, dangerous opponent, he did a better job later in the fight, but you can see that's not easy for him, you know? And that's what I all tie into a guy like Madrimov. And I'm not saying he's going to be a Lomachenko, you know, obviously Lomachenko's already had a, you know, very successful pro career, but yeah, I think Madrimov's one of those guys that's going to fall into, you know, some of those kind of problems. You know, you look at a guy like Aransas Barthelemy, who, you know, always looks Cuban, always looks like he's got the talent to do more. And, you know, he gets into all that jumping in and out and the dull fights. You know, there's other guys like that. You know, when Lara doesn't fight well, he does it. I mean, even Billy Joe Saunders, he's from the UK, and, you know, he gets into that style too much. And I think we'll see a little less of that as time goes on, now that the AM have gotten away from that point counting system for a while.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I just I don't know. It seems like we're falling for because you're great in the amateurs that you're going to be number one in your division, and it just time and time again. I mean, it took, what was it, James DeGale was the first gold medalist that ever won a belt for the UK. Am I right with that? Was that a thing? I think that was. For a gold medalist.
Yeah,
anyway.
I think that
for Great Britain.
Think it back. I think that does sound right. Of course, you had Alan Minter, although it's misleading in a sense because Alan Minter was the middleweight champ of the world, and he was an Olympic bronze medalist. So
he didn't get the gold
when he had to fight against Eastern European pros. You know, back in the 72, I believe
right.
Alan Minter was a 72, but. Getting a silver is damn. I mean, getting a bronze is damn good when you're fighting in that era. You're fighting pros from the Soviet Union and East Germany, and all the other Eastern Bloc countries and the Cubans. So yeah, I think that was right, but a little bit maybe misleading
yeah.
in that sense. But your point in the sense that there has to be some adjustment to the pros. Style, and there were amateurs in the past that could do that, and they weren't always, you know, back then, even back 40, 50 years ago, you had amateurs who were, you know, gold medals and didn't make it in the pros, but then you had, you know, in the amateurs, you were fighting without headgear, you didn't have the point systems where you weren't trying to put any, you know, where it became where you weren't trying to put any hurt on the opponent. You know, they got to that. It used to be that, yeah, they would be, you know, counting scoring punches, but also, you know, you were looking to hurt the guy or take him out. And that kind of left the amateurs and made the transition even a little more difficult. That's where sometimes it became harder to identify some of these guys that might be good. And that's where, you know, there is more of an adjustment like that. That's where you started to very recently, before they changed that scoring system or right after they changed it, you know, you had some U.S. pros starting to turn pro younger because they were saying, hey, we're not even getting any Olympic TV exposure anymore, and we're not being trained to fight in any type of a pro style. So I might as well go pro. You know, guys like Devin Haney, you know, you've had recently.
Yep.
And you know, there
changing
been
that
others.
Age
Vito,
to 19 too, you know?
Yeah, right. So, you know, when we're going to talk about some of those guys when we talk about some of these Americans coming, the up-and-comers in the state of American boxing. So, yeah, it is an interesting subject. And a lot of these, you know, a lot of these former Soviet bloc country fighters turned pro later, you know, and some of them had World Series of Boxing fights. So, again, like you said, a lot of their fanboy base will rave about, well, this guy's only had X amount of fights. Yeah, but you're not counting all the fights he had in the World Series of Boxing and the fact that he had 340 amateur fights and turned pro when he's 28 years old. You know, the guy's a man already at this point who had the World Series of Boxing semi-pro fights and you know, a whole slew of amateur fights. So it's not like some kid turning pro who's 19 who's had five amateur fights and stepping up.
Yeah, that's very true. And then we also had Tim Tszyu beating up Dennis Hogan in front of what looked to be like a full-on crowd, you know, no spacing, just straight-up crowd. Obviously, Australia handled it better than us, which isn't to say much because, you know, we were one of the worst countries with it. But, and of course, I'm talking about the COVID. There'd be times, you know, they even did it during the Australian Open in the beginning rounds. They had this little minor case breakout, and they'd shut stuff down, and then boom, you know, so they're getting crowds much earlier than we had. Now we're starting to get more and more, especially in Texas and whatnot. But it was popping there, no doubt about it. Speaking of 154 here, what do you see in the youngster Tim Tszyu? Dennis Hogan proved to be a pretty good 154-pounder. I thought he beat Munguia. Obviously, going up to 160 against Charlo was not the best thing for him. But he lasted, you know, he did okay, whatever. But really, that Munguia, and I'm not trying to, you know, talk up Munguia a whole lot. Maybe he is going to be better at 160. I don't know. Maybe 150 was starting to be too hard to make. He is young. He is a young guy. I think he's only like 22. So maybe that's why he was looking sluggish in some of those fights. But Munguia was a lot. You know, there was some boxing Twitter folks that were getting behind him saying, oh, we got to see him against this guy, that guy, this guy. And then I thought Dennis Hogan beat him. So Dennis Hogan, for where Tim Tszyu is, I think it was a good opponent for him. And although, you know, like I mentioned, he got a little wide and stuff like that, he took care of business. At times he's a little crude, but where do you see out of him in his development thus far?
Well, I'm looking at Tim Tszyu this way, Chris. He wasn't on my radar screen at all. And then just the way he took care of business against Horn and Hogan put him on my radar screen. Where he wouldn't have been, but I think some people are taking it a little too far. I ended up agreeing with this. We just had the debate in Transnational, which the new rankings came out today, where it was suggested for him to come in at 10. I agreed with that, but I already thought Fundora should have been in that spot. And the way Transnational does it is, you know, you just don't enter if you're not in action that week, unless somebody else is dropping out or something like that. So it wasn't Fundora didn't fight this week. He's fighting May 1st. Just what I'm saying is I'm trying to keep in perspective. I mean, I think Sebastian Fundora would annihilate Tim Tszyu. I think that's a horrendous style matchup for Tszyu, and he'd get out muscled and Fundora would be blasting him with the uppercuts. And I don't think there would be anything much Tszyu could do about it. I'm not doing that, saying that to knock Tszyu. I'm just trying to get perspective, you know? So to me, if I'm talking who's the better up and comer, Sebastian Fundora or Tim Tszyu, I'm taking Fundora easily. And I sense that some people are getting carried away, saying, well, you know, Tszyu is, you know, going to be some people I have seen who are pretty knowledgeable fans and writers even saying, like, well, you know, Zoo's a threat to the top of the division at this point. Don't necessarily see it that way. Now, you know, I'm not saying, you know, might he do okay against, say, a Jason Rosario? He might. You know, they're not going to fight with the politics and for various reasons. But, again, you're theoretically trying to say, well, where's this guy? Where's Zoo at? Now, I think one thing that has me looking at different than a lot of people, and really even a little bit the way you broke it down, Chris, I don't think Dennis Hogan's that good. I never did. He never beat anybody. Everybody looks at the Munguia fight. A lot of people like yourself, who I respect, did think he won that fight. I thought Munguia edged it, but Munguia did not look good. Now, I'll admit, I have been one of the people that's been a Munguia backer. But one thing I've learned in boxing and life as time's gone on, and you always hope you learn more. Sometimes you don't, and sometimes you do. One thing I think I've learned more as I've gotten older and more experience in things is you have to adjust sometimes what you thought. And in other words, I'm not adjusting to myself that I think Hogan is really that good. He hasn't, like I said, he never beat anybody, but that performance of Munguia's against Hogan causes me some concern, you know, moving on with him. I'm still a believer. I think what I'm looking at there, you know, you're right, he was a big guy for making the 154, but even more so, that was he's a very young guy, and that was during a sequence where they had him fighting a lot. Wasn't fighting the best competition, but fighting a lot. And I'm just not sure that his motivational level was really up for Hogan that night. Now, you know, that's Munguia's fault and not Hogan's, and Munguia, you know, can't be taking chances like that. I mean, he almost cost himself a victory by doing that. But I also felt in that fight that Hogan was in a glorified survival mode. You know, people were giving him rounds. I just thought he was just trying to stay around. I didn't think he was doing that much. And Munguia can be crude. He's getting a little better at that. But, you know, I'm not saying it wasn't a close fight because of Munguia fighting poorly, but I don't Dennis Hogan that highly. He just doesn't, to me, have any significant victories. I mean, it's just a fact. You look at his record. He doesn't.
Doesn't have power.
He has no power at all. And, you know, Chris, you know boxing. I mean, a guy's only so dangerous when they don't have any power. I mean, you've got to really be a tremendous boxer. And a lot of these guys just aren't. And, you know, they brought Hogan over to the U.S. This is when you're really boxing fanatics like us, and people who cover the sport and follow and commentate. I was watching CBS Sports Network quite a bit before he fought Munguia, where they had brought him over and had him fighting in a main event for some kind of, you know, BS obscure alphabet belt that he was the champ, and he looked terrible. You know, he was lucky to get the decision, and he was fighting a nobody.
Yeah.
He was fighting a nobody. And that's what had me kind of had Dennis Hogan kind of off my radar screen early on. I'm like, man, this guy's undefeated. I said, but they're trying to bring this guy over to see if they can do something with him. And he just doesn't have, you know, he just doesn't have it. So, he did better against Munguia than I thought. I'll admit, I thought he was just going to get blown out. And like I said, I kind of blame that on Munguia not handling a guy that was in kind of a glorified survival mode that well. But so when I'm evaluating, it all gets back then to Tim Tszyu. I do give Tim Tszyu points, though. To me, when you get rid of a guy like that, like he did with Hogan and Horn, I give you points. I mean, you know, he's
right.
Not letting him hang around, showing he's superior. He's on my radar screen now, so he has moved up, but I don't have him as high on my radar screen as some other people, but he's on mine now. I'm not discounting him. He's done enough to deserve to be taken notice of, and that's the way I'm looking at him right now.
Yeah, I think I like the way you put that because, like I said, you do see some crudeness in him. You do see him miss, kind of loading up, missing punches. But when he starts to like land the heavier shots, he really likes to rein them down to the head and body. I liked how we did that. I liked how Dennis Hogan tried to kind of grab his head a little bit and kind of clinch, because he had been doing a pretty good job of survival clinch, and whether he made an adjustment or not, but that uppercut came right at that time. So I don't know. And then, you know, obviously fighting there might not be that easy either, if you think about it, you know, because – I mean, like I said, Jeff Horn wasn't a huge, huge name or anything if you look at who he had beaten. But they obviously, Pacquiao was a different ball game. But to be able to put that many people in a stadium was pretty dope. And obviously he's going to have more following because of his father. And he's starting to, you know, make some noise. So, yeah, a Charlo or Castaño's not Pacquiao going over there. But I do actually think that there is some truth to the money they can offer. I'm not going to say it's what they said it was, but I do think that they can come up with something. I don't think it'll be next, nor do I actually think he should take that fight next. I think he actually should, because 154 is so damn deep. You might have, you know, you got fights. You got fights to have before that. But I do like him. I mean, and like you said, right to the point, well, we could say what he looked like or the good, the bad, the pros and cons, but he got the job done when others either couldn't or didn't look as good doing it. So that is, it's not just style points either, because he's not really a style points guy. He comes forward a lot, but I do notice him taking that little, you know, step to the side or half a step back. He probably has to defend himself better with his guard. But sometimes when you're in there, John, with somebody you know you're going to take out, and like you said, if you're not even like a Paulie Malignaggi who could move brilliantly and had a great jab, especially at 140, if you're not that, you're going to have a whole lot of problems, as, you know, we saw with Dennis Hogan. Some people will take this and go, well, I got him number one now, you know, and it's like, well, hold on, dude. You know, like, styles make fights. And if someone's going to box and has a little bit more power, or a guy that's going to go right to you, like Castaño, what's he going to do with that? Or Charlo, who can do kind of both. He can kind of move up, you know, back and forth, up and down, whatever. So I just read the text message that I sent you when we were talking about it. And as far as the, it's kind of funny because I totally sent a totally a somewhat misleading message to you. I was thinking next week, because of next week in his light on preview. So I was thinking we were going to do it next week.
we could do the Americans next week. I wanted to kind of rally
people up, saying, hey, when is this, when's the takeover going to happen and all that type of stuff. You know what I mean? I kind of wanted to put it a little rallying point as well. But now that I'm looking at the text, I see exactly why you thought it was this week.
Well, that sounds good. We'll just preview that a little bit then this week, that we'll next week go over the status of the Americans in pro boxing in every division. We'll go over the guys that are already true champs or ranked.
Right.
We'll go over guys on the fringe and we'll go over the prospects and then getting ready for that, which we'll fully do next week. You get pleasantly surprised how many Americans are out there. It's actually underrated. There really isn't a drop off of at all when you start looking at all the talent and all the Americans that are out there. And like I said, I got a feeling with the diversity of the United States of America that a lot of people don't even realize that some of these guys are Americans. So we can tease it a little bit like that.
That is a great point. And even, for instance, the Charlo twins, nobody really knew Jermall, really, besides, hey, he can knock somebody out, but he's pretty crude himself. We're talking about crude fighters at the time, you know, years back, because it's funny, they've been around for a long time. And it was Jermell who was the boring fighter. You know, he was the boring fighter who was just going to box, and he's not that good, and, you know, he's pretty basic, and Al's just moving these guys along, and he's just, these guys aren't going to go anywhere, and that type of thing. And then, wow, they're right in front of your face. And there's a variety of those. Even a Joe Smith Jr., there's a lot of these fighters. And the reason why we're talking about it, because you start to notice these last couple of years, and I mentioned it a couple podcasts ago, the effect that Floyd Mayweather's having on the amateurs to an extent. I'm not saying it's all that, but it has to be some of that, because we're seeing a deeper classes
looking like they're more ready to turn pro. They're turning pro earlier. Some of it has to do with that age 19 type of thing. Some of it has to do with what you were talking about as well. And also, some of it's just politics where you know you're the best guy, but you're not going to, you know, they already know who they're going to pick. So you're going to lose the fight, and they already got this guy, and that they're pushing that guy. Meanwhile, the better fighter, you know, well, actually, look at that the 2012 class. You know, I mean, Spence is, I think he got the furthest in it, but he didn't go far. And there's a variety of champions from there and some guys that may touch the pound for pound. And I think that some of this is just, it's kind of sneaking up on us the last couple of years, but also just as a UK, US, Ukrainian, Uzbekistan combination of boxing Twitter and fan base, it's funny because we keep hearing the takeover. The takeover is happening. The takeover, they're going to take over. The whole sport's going to be the top dudes are going to be that. And some of these places are much bigger. They're still small countries, relatively speaking, but some of them aren't super small, like, let's say, Puerto Rico, right? At one time, if we count all the alphabets, I think they hit 7 or 8 champions about 8 years ago or something like that, where it was like, whoa, holy crap. And now, obviously, they're in a rut. But I find it kind of like, well, hold on now. You guys keep telling us that it's a takeover, but when did the takeover happen? Is it happening? Did you just get robbed with the Golovkin-Canelo thing, and that's why you don't think it happened? Or and like you said, some of it is, let's be honest, some of it is not the right reasons. You can love whoever you want. I mean, America has adopted, speaking of Manny Pacquiao, speaking of a lot of Mexican fighters and fighters all over the world, we've Golovkin, Lomachenko, Usyk, we've adopted, of course, Usyk doesn't really fight here as much as biggest fights, but we adopt fighters, but we're not going to claim those as our fighters. But the fact that our fighters come up in that, you know, depth level, and it's nowhere near the depth it used to be 30, 40, 50, 60, 80 years ago, nothing like that. But I think that kind of keeps us on the low. You know what I mean? I don't know. You get this scenario, and quite frankly, if a quote-unquote, he looks white type of thing, right, because we can go into heritage and all that, like Golovkin and Uzbekistan, like you mentioned, what heritage actually that is, it's not an Eastern European thing, actually. And there's nothing wrong, I'm not saying anything along that, but it is kind of like when you look at Lomachenko, when you look at Kovalev, they're white dudes, and they're kicking ass. And that hasn't happened since Italian and Irish in a long time. So the problem I have with it, when it kicks into the media, in the part-time media, John, where you can clearly see items taking place where you're like, well, hold on. Now, so Ward was cheap against Kovalev, but Lomachenko wasn't cheap up against Teofimo. You know, it's like, well, you can't have it both ways now. You know, and plus we've seen a certain amount, or Tyson Fury. I'm not going to sit there and say, oh, Tyson Fury won because he hit Wilder on the side of his head, man. That's illegal. We see that every weekend. We see low blows every weekend. But it's the same folks, and fans are going to be fans. So I'm not even necessarily talking about that. I'm really talking about the media and the part-time media, and there's a lot more part-time media over these last 10 years. And that's kind of setting the tone for what we want to talk about as well. So it's kind of a rivalry thing. It's kind of addressing what I believe to be somewhat of an issue that we've seen. And other times, like if Fury, I just think if you think Ward was cheap against Kovalev, cool. Then you got to kind of think some of these other fighters are cheap too. But as we know, that's how boxing is. And we go back to those black and white fights in the 50s, and you go back to 40s, 30s. I mean, talk about rabbit punching. Like, dude, it was a lot of cheap shots, but that's what was going on. So long story short, that's also kind of the whole part of it. We're not trying to just big up the American fighters and we're going to dominate the sport. It's not that egotistical American thing. But in the same breath, it's like, well, you guys keep telling us this last decade about this takeover, but when is it going to happen? Because we got something in the reserve coming up.
Yeah, it's not going to – when you break it down by division and all that's out there, it's not going to happen. And I think maybe realize as much for reasons that you're saying and you do – you know, boxing media has been cut as time's gone on. You had full-time boxing writers for – newspapers not too long ago and they're all gone and you know there is truth to it. It's not that things don't evolve, but there is truth to it because we see this in different realms. We see this in news realms as well. You know, it doesn't mean they were perfect, but when you had full-time boxing writers, full-time boxing journalists, you still have to adhere to a code of, you know, journalistic ethics, or you're trying to. And it doesn't mean that there's not some great part-time people out there, but I think it is partially what you said, is you've also got some part-time people out there that aren't really binding themselves by any kind of journalistic code of anything, including just rooting for certain classes and groups of fighters, which is really you want to say odd, but then it might be for reasons that are not good, like you've alluded to a couple of times as we've been having this discussion. And it becomes even more clear to me when you actually take the time to start writing it down, breaking it down, and you really do see that there's much more American you really would be led to believe. And I think you have made a good point a couple of times, and there's some other people I respect who have made that point. It wasn't something that I was necessarily looking at, but I do think it's true after the point's been made. You know, the popularity of Floyd Mayweather probably has brought some of this young talent into boxing. And I don't think that's something that I look at enough. I think that when we're looking at the timing, there is a generation highly talented coming up that has gotten some inspiration from Floyd Mayweather's success in the ring and out of the ring. And, you know, that's a good thing for American boxing. And maybe wasn't something that I thought about a few years ago, that influence had inspired quite a few young fighters, and now we're starting to see the fruits of that with these guys coming up, because there really is a developing depth out there. And like I said, I think that there's a lot of these fighters people don't even realize are Americans.
Yeah, and that's not to say that some of these young fighters, I mean, last spring when there was no fights, I had plenty of segments on saying, hey, you got to earn it first. And you can't say the whole division's ducking you when they go and, like, you know, maybe Haney talking to Teofimo saying, I'm getting ducked, but then he fights Lomachenko. It's not to say that some of these guys want to be Floyd too much to where you're like, well, hold on. Before Floyd got famous, you know, he had grinded there. You know, he had gotten there. He had made himself a commodity. And some of it was the right fighter, like a Gotti, a Zab Judah, when that time came. Some of it was the Diego Corrales. Some of it was some of the controversy with that first Castaño fight, backing that up. Whatever the case may be, it's not – I'm not trying to sugarcoat anything. And when I bring up race in general, we're starting to see fractions in general. It's one thing to go for your countrymen or even your heritage. You know, I get all that. I get all that for sure, especially as a fan. I mean, that's kind of what it is a lot of times. And I do love how we're getting all these fighters from all different countries. And maybe we're spoiled here because a lot of them come here and fight. And I love it. I absolutely love it. Usyk, Lomachenko, Golovkin, all these. My problem is, you know, when we start, you know, a lot of people say, oh, people are jumping off Golovkin, or now they don't, you know, that now they're disrespecting him, but you kind of forget about all the stuff you said about him before he fought someone really good. And even Daniel Jacobs, who's like a B-ish fighter, sometimes he can look like a B plus A minus, sometimes he can look like a B minus. I wouldn't put him in the A category, in my opinion, because it's not like he's a great outside boxer as a professional, and that's a lot what he did against Golovkin until the end where he started, or till the middle to end where he, you know, started to get him to the body and whatnot. But my thing is, why were we even talking about Hagler and B-Hop with Golovkin before he did that? Like, that was my problem, and if he's such a boogeyman, well, he could have went up and fought Ward. I'm not saying you had to, but that's the problem I have, and the fans are going to be fans. But when the media, and especially the part-time media layer there, that just gets overboard, and it's something I've seen. So it is a kind of a combination. And just back to race in general, it can be a lot. I mean, there's plenty of channels on YouTube that are going to vote for anything PBC or any black fighter, and that's it. They're biased towards it. It's one thing to be biased towards your background, like, hey, I'm rooting for him. I think he's going to win, but I'm rooting for my guy because of this. That's a whole different story. But, yeah, the media part is where I have a little bit of issue with that, you know?
Yeah, you're right. The media doing it, not just straight fans, is bizarre, for lack of a maybe better term. That's about the kindest, I guess, I can put it, is bizarre. Because when I see it, I just said, coming out of a media member, it's just bizarre. And especially because, you know, boxing, even though, as you correctly pointed out, you know, it's got a history of ethnic rivalries and people voting for their ethnic group and things like that. Which, you know, hey, that has been a part of boxing, even if maybe you want to say it's an unfortunate part of it. It's been a long-term part of it. But, yeah, then, you know, media get involved in it. And then also, you know, you would think that there should be some evolution. You know, the U.S. is a diverse country, and diversity is a strength. And, you know, we know boxing is a sport that's at one time or another had all different ethnic groups involved. So, you know, you would think things would have evolved some, and when they don't, I also find that strange as well.
Yeah, definitely. As far as, did you want to expand on any of that? I mean, obviously we won't dig too deep into the fighters, but any other words you want to do? We're kind of teasing a full week of this just randomly. I did want to do more research, so I was prepared as well. But any other things you want to add to that before maybe we talk about some fights coming up this weekend?
No, I just think it'll be very, very interesting, and we'll get even more research before next week. But as you start researching into it, you get pleasantly surprised that there really is still a lot of depth of American talent out there and American up-and-coming talent. So in terms of talent, the future of pro boxing in the United States is very good. And really it also, almost in terms of, you look at marketing, and let's face it, I mean, certainly Eddie Hearn knows how to market to the UK market. PBC obviously has a lot of Americans, but there may be even more of an opening than I thought when I start looking at the depth of American talent that in terms of U.S. marketing, if just some top Americans just start fighting some top Americans, and maybe we stop worrying about belt things and all that kind of stuff, which we can go on ad nauseum, but it's always worth mentioning. Yeah, stop worrying about all that, and just in terms of U.S. domestic marketing, getting some of these Americans in with each other for some big fights in the United States, because it is not in dispute that the United States does generate the most money in boxing. And as you correctly pointed out, that even includes, of course, all kinds of foreign fighters, to their credit, coming over here to fight and train with U.S. trainers, which oftentimes does help them. And the best of the non-U.S. fighters often end up with U.S. trainers over here and making their mark.
Yeah. Very true, and this is actually going to work out well, because we kind of got that gist out, and then we could just go right to the fighters next week. Speaking of, though, this is a good little segue here. Boots Ennis is in a step-up fight no matter how you look at it, no matter if he shines and barely gets touched, or if he gets lit up by Lipinets at times like Mikey Garcia did, even in the clean win. Stanonius against Delorme is another good step up. What do you think of this? I know it's a triple header, but especially these, you know, the feature and co-feature here. Boots is, you know, looks the part. He looks like he can land really big punches, but also box. We'll see just how powerful he is. This is a perfect example of seeing what he can do with Lipinets. He obviously has, and this is another thing with America, you know, the issue with the promotional stuff, and that's what Ennis is actually stuck in right now. There is some stuff that's going to develop, and hopefully, you know, it gets figured out a little bit. I know it's still got some time. I think in a couple of weeks there is a decision somewhere in there. But how do you see these two fights breaking down for Showtime?
I love this card because I think even really sort of independently it stacks up. You look at the transnational ratings most recently at welterweight, you know, Lipinets is number 9 and, you know, Jaron Boots Ennis has entered at number 10. Even though he hasn't had this kind of a step up, I agree with that. I was in favor of it. He's shown that kind of ability and pedigree so far. So, you know, so you have a legit bottom part of the top 10 welterweight fight, and you got one of the best, really, even though he just entered the top 10, you're still kind of looking at him as a prospect in Ennis. You know, Lipinets, early in his career, even though he's not really that big for the weight, you know, 140 and now 147 welterweight, he's kind of a strong guy. He's a former kickboxer. And I like when he came forward putting on pressure. He looked pretty powerful. Then he was with Buddy McGirt for a while, and Buddy likes to have his fighters at least learn to be defensively responsible in box. And some of his performances maybe didn't look as sharp, but you saw him adding more boxing skill to his game, and he could defend himself better. And then, you know, he went to Joe Goosen, and Joe Goosen got him back to just putting on the pressure, which, you know, he had some performances there where he was more impressive and punching with power, you know, had a very exciting fight with Peterson, but which he ended up, you know, winning by a stoppage later in the fight. Really, that was an underrated fight, but, you know, you saw it his last fight with Clayton, a guy who boxed him well, and he was having a lot of trouble. I think I see trouble now coming in for him against Ennis because, you know, when I think McGirt was looking for his career down the road, that, you know, making him a better boxer, where if he got in trouble or, you know, he had to take his foot off the gas for some rounds, he could defend himself better, be more effective. And he's away from that now. I don't think he'll be able to get back to it, even though Joe Goosen, you know, knows what he's doing as well. And what I'm saying is I just think, you know, Ennis is going to be a little too strong for him when Lipinets is trying to come in, putting on pressure. And then he's not going to have the skill set or the ability to kind of back off and be able to survive. And I think there's going to be a point where Ennis is going to start unloading some barrages on him and be able to stop him. I like everything I've seen about Ennis so far, except when he does open up, he's a little bit inaccurate at times. And I'd like to see him just a bit more accurate. You know, you can be vulnerable if you do things well, but you're not accurate, then you're not hurting the guy, because even if you got power, you're missing. And I'd like to see him be a bit more accurate. But I see everything else in his package that is great. I agree with the hype. So I think he'll be able to be accurate enough, and I think he'll eventually get, you know, Lipinets out of there. I don't think Lipinets will be able to sustain the pressure against him without taking fire in return and being forced to try to back off, and then it's going to probably be the end of the night for him.
Which would be a big statement if he ended up getting a stoppage.
I think so. I think he's fighting a legit contender in Lipinets. So when you're doing that, you can't say if he just gets the win that it's not good enough, because this is a true step up. This isn't a hype step up. This is a true step up. That's what makes this fight interesting. So I don't think he can be criticized if he just gets the win, and it's a solid, clear win, and it goes the distance. But I agree, the big statement will be to stop him. Lipinets has never been stopped. You know, he's got the draw with Clayton, just didn't look good, and he lost to Mikey Garcia where he got dropped. But he fought pretty well in that fight. It wasn't really a bad outing for him, even though he lost. No real shame in that one. But I just think in Clayton, he was having problems with Clayton, and it's one of these deals where anything Clayton can do, Ennis can do better. And I think that's going to be bad
sure.
news for Lipinets. So that's the way I see that one going. And we got another good one. And another one of my favorite prospects out there is, you know, Amantas Stanionis, who's facing Thomas Delorme on the same Showtime card. Another excellent matchup, because Delorme is a guy kind of bad, we know how good Terrence Crawford is, but, you know, had a bad performance against Terrence Crawford, but I got to give the guy credit. He's a guy that bounced back from that. Even though he's picked up losses since then, he's been competitive since, had some surprise performances. I mean, he had a great performance against Ugas, which was a fight of the year type of fight. It was on the night of on the Fox portion of the Mayweather-McGregor.
Yeah, the prelims.
And it was both guys got dropped, and, you know, we know how good Ugas has turned out to be. And very tight fight. Ugas deservedly got the decision, but, you know, he put Delorme down twice, but Delorme put him down once. It was a great action fight from two guys you don't think of as action fighters. And Delorme kind of kept going on from there. You know, he had that draw with Jesse Vargas, fought real well. He's had a lot of good outings. He performed well. He lost, you know, Minnesota guy, Chris. He lost to Jamal James in a competitive fight, but faded down the stretch recently. But, you know, James is arguably a top 10 guy himself. You could make a case he should be at the bottom of the top 10. He's only got the one loss to Ugas. So, you know, Delorme has just been in with really tough competition and performed well. Just had that fight that he didn't perform particularly well against Crawford, even though Crawford's a top-notch fighter, but has fought well since. So I think even though it's a fight, I think Stanionis should win. You know, you can't count out Delorme. He's really proven he's got heart, and he's versatile, and he can do some different things, and he provides a real test. And Stanionis is not a huge puncher, but he's a good puncher. So I'm not sure if he can stop Delorme or not, but he's pretty good at wearing his opponents down, and he puts pressure on. I think he is going to be able to get Delorme out of there later in this one.
Yeah, I really like the way they're moving him. At times, you know, it's been fun to watch, because sometimes, you know, maybe in the first five or six fights, I remember seeing some rounds where it seemed like he was trying to get his man out there a little too hard or whatever. It seems like he settled in. And it's not like he has, you know, he has the Wolf. He's got that Samuel Figueroa. He's got a Justin Deloach. He had the Gonzalez. So, you know, this is clearly, like you said, that his best opponent. And only in your 13th fight, you know, that tells me something about it. You know, I'm really – so you're thinking he might stop him. You're thinking he might be able to get him out of there.
Yeah, I think he's wearing him down. I think with Stanionis, he puts good pressure on. He'll throw body shots. Delorme's tough, but Stanionis will start to wear him down and get to him later in the fight. Now, to me, this is a good enough of a step up by Stanionis. Even though Delorme is not quite in the top 10, he is a fringe type guy legitimately, and he's been in with tough competition. I think for me, Stanionis has the kind of performance I think that he'll have, he's going to make his case for the bottom of the top 10 as well. And, you know, I think that welterweight really is the deepest division in boxing right now, because we're talking about guys battling for the 9-10 spots, like Ennis and Stanionis trying to crack in, Jamal James
right.
being squeezed out, got a case. And I mean, and there's others like them, and, you know, the top 10's loaded with talent. And you've got guys like Keith Thurman and Manny Pacquiao, who haven't even fought recently, that aren't in there because of inactivity, who, you know, very well may resume their careers, and not to mention all the up-and-coming talent you got. So, you know, people can talk – they can go hipster about some lighter divisions, and there's divisions where there's a lot of talent in there, but I don't care what anybody's going to tell me. When you go fighter for fighter and you go deep,
top 15, 20 names or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the top talent in boxing. I mean, we'll get into these guys next week, but when you talk about, I mean, this guy doesn't even get talked about enough. You know, you talk about Jesus Ramos, you know, talk
Ramos,
about American
yeah.
prospect, 20 years old, he's 15-0 with 14 KOs. And the guy looks frighteningly good. I mean,
and they keep,
you know,
moving him too. They keep giving him
yeah,
fights.
Yeah, moving him.
Here's another one. Here's another one. You know.
Yeah, he's gonna fight. He's gonna fight Carlos Molina coming up, a tricky opponent who's durable. You know, they're moving him. And you know, you got Vito Mielnicki from New Jersey. You know, guy just out of high school. I mean, these guys are all welterweights. I mean, the division is just, not to mention the guys that are already contenders, you know, Spence, Crawford, Danny Garcia, Virgil Ortiz, Mikey Garcia, and, you know, then some of the fighters we talked about. I mean, just a absolutely loaded, deep division.
Well, you know, John, now, you know, the Spence and Crawford's fight not happening, so... Any fight, I don't want to see any fight at welterweight unless it's that, not that. You know, I see that this last year or so a lot. And once again, not just fans, literally part-time media saying, I don't want to see any welterweight fight. They were saying this before Pacquiao Thurman. They were saying this before Spence Porter. I don't want to see any fight unless it's just that. When in the history, and I don't know my history clearly as well as you, but when, like, is that happen a lot? I don't want to see one fight unless it's just this one fight at the deepest division in the sport. It just seems like, wow, really? So you don't want to see it. So what were you – so the four kings, did you only want to see Hagler and Leonard? Did screw the other fights? And I, obviously I'm not trying to bring in the same – you know, these are the same guys. But then they'll quickly go, well, let's see these new four kings. They're going to save us. I trust and believe in, and none of them are fighting each other. Now, some of them are good fights, like the Javier Fortuna and whatnot, but it just gets to me, as you can tell. But just talking a little bit about Delorme, you know, he lost a good fight to Aubrey Gou. The Kareem Mayfield, I remember he kind of shined in that one. Close fight with Lundy a long time ago. You know, he lost to Crawford, but I'll say this. In the early goings, that's kind of back when this is like 5-6 years ago. But this is kind of when Crawford would get hit early in fights, a little probably too much to be a pound for pound top guy. And he did actually land some pretty good punches, but then just got throttled in that fight. Like you said, that Ugas fight was back and forth. One of his best performances was against Jesse Vargas like 3 years ago or 2.5 years ago. That was a draw. And then, like you said, he did. Jamal James finally kept to a game plan pretty much the whole fight. And so that was something that, you know, a lot of us thought he could win that fight if he stuck to it. But a lot of times he falls in the brawl. So, yeah, I really, really like this. Joe Smith Jr., Maxim Vlasov, and then Conor Benn also is fighting Samuel Vargas. I don't know what you think of Conor Benn, but Joe Smith Jr., did this fight was supposed to happen February. Was it Vlasov that got COVID for this one?
Yeah, let's definitely get into that, but I'll touch on Conor Benn briefly because we were just talking about welterweights. Now, let me just say what I can say in fairness to him is, you know, he's looked a little bit better to me than I thought he would. that last fight against Formella, even though Formella is limited offensively and has no pop, he did go the distance with Porter. You know, Ben looked pretty good, but here's the problem with boxing, you know, alphabet belts and marketing and too many divisions. You know, welterweight, fortunately, it's a traditional division, and it's got just a boatload of talent that we've talked about fighting. Now, let's think this is a good time to point out something about Conor Benn. Now, he's fighting Sammy Vargas, who's been like a, you know, a trial horse gatekeeper. You know, he fought Spence, fought Virgil Ortiz, fought Danny Garcia, you know, lost to all these guys. You know, Spence and Garcia stopped him. You know, he dropped Amir Khan. Khan was able to come back and get a decision over him. So, but what I'm getting to is this. I mean, even if Conor Benn looks decent against some guy like Sammy Vargas, I mean, look at the welterweights we're talking about. You know, Errol Spence, Terrence Crawford, Sean Porter, Danny Garcia, Virgil Ortiz, Mikey Garcia, Jerron Ennis, Amantas Stanionis, you know, Quadratillo. All these Jamal James, you got even guys Abel Ramos, you know, Jesus Ramos. I mean, you know who is Conor Benn going to take on and beat? I mean, even in a few fights. In other words, you know, it won't even be fringe guys and you know who knows. You know, with the boxing politics, how they'll pop an alphabet belt out there or something like that, or WBA regular or something. But what I'm just saying is that's what gets ridiculous about, you know, too many belts and right, these regular belts and all kinds of nonsense. Hearn's not going to put him in with one of these other guys. We're not going to see that. The thing. I mean, we're not going to see that. I mean, I guess the only way you would see it is, you know, if you could project, but we know how boxing goes, you know, like Terrence Crawford was still, you know, beating guys looking for opponents and he wanted to have some overseas opponent. They thought they could make a payday out of it or something like that. But I mean, I'm just saying, I guess, you know, they're not going to have him go looking for one of these guys. That's for sure.
Yeah, no doubt about it. That's a very good point. Do you think Joe Smith Jr. is going to have an issue with Vlasov this weekend?
I think Vlasov's better than people think. I think you want to go back to during the last days of HBO when they were still showing some interesting bouts. They had a catchweight bout between him and Gilberto Ramirez at 171 pounds, which was competitive. Ramirez clearly won it, but Vlasov showed he was a competent fighter. Then pulled an interesting move. He went all the way up to cruiserweight and actually, you know, fought the cruiserweight contenders wasn't successful in picking up a alphabet belt or anything. And then he decided to make the move back down to light heavyweight. I do think the guy's a good fighter. I think he's a lot better fighter than people think. To me, he is a guy on the edge of the real top 10. I mean, I'm not talking about alphabet top 10s or anything like that. I'm talking real top 10, like, you know, Transnational or The Ring. You know, to me, he's a guy just on the edge of that, right around, maybe just outside of the 10 spot or at about the 10 spot. So I think he's legit in that sense. Joe Smith's been fighting really well. I think even before people caught on to it, I think he had underrated boxing skill. He's a guy with a huge punch, but he's never been, you know, defensively irresponsible. You know, he works his jab, he holds his hands up, he doesn't rush in, and he's gotten even better than that. But I think people talk about him like he's a guy that just started to do that. I don't think that's the case. I mean, he may have gotten a bit better at it, and he's been trained well, but he even though he's a huge puncher, he's never been a defensively irresponsible guy. You know, you might not say he's a dynamic boxer, but he's been a competent boxer. And I think that, you know, that actually gives him a couple avenues really to beat Vlasov, because Vlasov's kind of like that himself, not the puncher that Smith is, not even close. But, you know, I think Smith can actually box with Vlasov, and I think, you know, we know Smith's got the power. So I think this is a fight that Smith's going to win. I think Vlasov's tougher than people realize, but I think Smith can actually kind of box and pressure his way a decision. He's always got those big hammers, really in both hands with Joe Smith. People look at his right hand, but he's got a hell of a left hook too. He to me is a true two-handed big puncher. So his opponents always have to be on guard, and you know he can kind of box and pressure and get a decision, I think, with that power threat he has, or bomb you out of there. He's got that kind of power. So I think that Smith actually has more avenues to win this fight than just knocking out Vlasov, and I think there's a chance it could be competitive, but I think he'll get the victory.
Yeah, I'm thinking 6-8 rounds of back and forth, and then, you know, maybe Smith starts to take over, land something that kind of changes the fight. Obviously, Joe Smith Jr., a great story, a guy that a lot of people just destroyed going into that Fonfara fight. Like, why is this on network TV? I can't believe this, that, and the third. And I didn't pick him to win, but I did watch a couple of his fights. I also watched the fight where he broke his jaw in two different spots, where he broke it, kept fighting, and it broke it in a different spot. And it kind of showed me, okay, well, the only time he lost was when he broke his jaw in two different spots. So let me look at this guy. Maybe this isn't as bad as people are saying. Like I said, I still picked Fonfara at the time. But that didn't go well for his network debut. It went well for Joe Smith Jr., but not Fonfara. Any other items that you actually, real quick, Ryan Garcia and Javier Fortuna. I like that fight because Fortuna, although he has flaws, he has a lot of experience. He's got some hand speed, and he's got some power. I think it's a real fight. I like this fight for Ryan Garcia. What do you think?
Well, Ryan Garcia's talent level a lot. I think even though Fortuna is as you described, I think it's a fight that Ryan Garcia shouldn't have too much problem with the exception that I don't view Luke Campbell as that big of a puncher. All his KOs were
right.
Lesser guy. I personally never thought much of his power, and he dropped Ryan Garcia. I mean, Ryan Garcia responded well, got up
and hit
him out.
Flush a few other times,
hit
like
him
several other times too.
Yeah, landed flush. Now, I didn't detract that much yet from Ryan Garcia like some people, and I don't want to look like I'm contradicting myself, but I still made a mental note, and it goes into the Fortuna fight because he's got some pop, like you said. What we could find out in that fight is if Ryan Garcia's got a chin problem. You know, Fortuna has enough pop that he could hurt. If Garcia's got a problem there, it could come out again. So I'm going to be looking for that in that fight. If Garcia turns out not to have any problems taking shots, I feel like it's a fight he wins pretty comfortably, and he might even get a stoppage there. But I'm going to be watching very closely when Fortuna lands flush, how Ryan Garcia reacts, because the one flaw, I don't think he's as flawed as even some people are saying. I mean, he's a young guy, tremendous speed and power. I mean, and he's got good size for the weight. I mean, got amateur pedigree. He's got a lot going for him. I think people underestimate that, but we know how this can go. If he turns out to be a guy who can't take a shot, he's going to be exciting because he's got power and speed, but he's also going to be vulnerable, and he might pick up some KO losses along the way. So I want to kind of watch and make sure he's not one of those guys, and I think the Fortuna fight can at least show us that.
Yeah, that's well said. Any other items you want to get to, sir?
Just that, you know, Joe Smith's interesting, and like you said, he's got a great story. I think you made a good point bringing out his PBC debut. In the early days of PBC, that's when they were still on NBC. That was an NBC fight. I got to admit, I was in the camp that you pointed out, Chris.
Yeah.
I was
right.
Joe Smith Jr. This guy hasn't really fought anybody. you know, he's fighting Fonfara on NBC. Where the hell is this coming from? And then there Smith just explodes with two-hand power and blows Fonfara out. What I'm getting to, why I want to bring that back up, though, is I know he got a lot of money from HBO and he got the big KO against Hopkins that went viral. But, you know, even though that was in the last days of HBO's boxing heyday and they've got 40 million subscribers, you know, it just seemed to me that I know he was looking at paydays, and then, you know, he fought Bivol on, you know, DAZN, which, you know, nobody was really seeing that at that time, and Bivol's a tough opponent. It took on a tough opponent in Sullivan Barrera on HBO, dropped him, but then, you know, got his jaw broken again and lost the decision. What I'm getting to is I'm sure Joe Smith was well compensated for all those fights, and I think it probably worked out pretty well for him financially, but it almost seemed that there was more star potential there that, you know, might have been lost if he took a different route, you know,
a little bit more.
Yeah, you know, he had that NBC appearance for PBC, and matter of fact, this is something that was very close to fruition, and it would have been a PBC fight, you know, remember, Top Rank tried to build up Shawnee Monahan, and they had him undefeated,
right.
But
yes.
He just wasn't showing a high talent level, so they let him go. And then, you know, he was available, and you know, PBC, you know, they were both, you know, Irish American guys, you know, from Long Island, and they could have had him. They were going to have him fight in Nassau Coliseum, which would have been perfect.
That's right.
Yeah, you know, you have that a PBC fight, you know, on network TV, you know, so and that was obviously a fight that Joe Smith, in hindsight, would have won by knockout. I mean, you know, there was fights like that, just you know, and Marcus Brown was in New York, is, you know, from Staten Island as well, you know, fighting on PBC, another New York guy. I mean, there was,
is that who he ended up fighting? Shawnee?
What
did they fight?
He ended up fighting Marcus Brown.
Yep.
So, you know, there were just, I just thought that there was some, I mean, I think his management did well for him in terms of money. You know, I think those HBO appearances and the DAZN appearance, him working some free agency, getting some money. Then he did sign an affiliated agreement with Top Rank. And, you know, they got him on ESPN, you know, against, you know, Jesse Reed, which is a great performance. And, you know, again, the great performance against Alvarez, but it seemed like outside of the Hardkin community, you know, a little bit of momentum maybe was lost as to who this guy was. And, you know, even though it was from long ago times now, you know, New York being a former boxing hotbed, and Smith had fought in the Golden Gloves. And, you know, as I've said, I go back and forth between West Virginia and New Jersey, which is, you know, New York Metro. And, you know, even though boxing is not what it was, even, gosh, in terms of coverage, even 10, 15 years ago, you know, Joe Smith not getting New York coverage. And,
right.
You know, even today, you would normally get some of that. He fought in the New York Golden Gloves, and kind of a shame there that, you know, and I know he's coming up on an ESPN, you know, he's got an ESPN platform this weekend, but I just feel like even with boxing maybe not being at the popularity level it was, that maybe there was some missed opportunity for Joe Smith to be a bit bigger. And maybe there's still time since he's working with ESPN, but I'd like to see him get a little bit of a higher U.S. profile before his career's over.
Yeah, you make a good point, because even if he would have just done the B-hop thing, and then, you know, that's a good point, especially in those some key, you know, like you said, Long Island, whatever, Barclays, like, he could have really even built, like, a full-on, at least a bigger fan base in general, and maybe getting them out there all the way like that. That is a good point, because that would have been a big fight in Long Island. I mean, that would have definitely, him and Shawnee would have put some butts in the seats, no doubt about it, and he would have looked like the highlight reel. And then that's where you get the casuals, John, when you say, and, dude, you got to see this video of what he did to B-Hop. And then also they go, he did that to B-Hop? Out of the ring, what? And then that's where you get that locomotive down the track a little bit.
Exactly, because I thought that at the time. Now, I'm not saying this in hindsight. I said,
sure,
you know, Twitter or podcasts before Smith fought Sullivan Barrera, you know, even though he dropped them, but again, got the jaw broken, ended up losing a clear decision. I didn't like him taking that fight for the reasons we're saying at that time. I thought, mm-hmm, you know, look, I know we talk in boxing about how guys need to step up and everything, but he just got the Hopkins knockout. He had been working some as a free agent. I'm sure he got well compensated, and just like with the Bivol fight on DAZN. But I just thought that those were momentum detracting fights for him, where if he would have taken a couple of other fights that were maybe a little more winnable with higher exposure, he could have been that much bigger and maybe made that money and made more money, you know, that in the long game. And I hope
maybe
it still
works
out for him.
Come to be a full-time fighter too, which obviously would help his career too. Being a full-time fighter definitely helps you, as we know, which is what he's not right now.
You know, he went from union laborer to he's got a tree business with his dad, is my understanding now. And, you know, that's a good thing. But like you said, you know, he hasn't really been in that full-time fighter role. And you know, he's an exciting guy to watch because he's got power. And like you said, his defense is responsible. He's not like you would stereotypically think just a crazy slugger who has no responsible defense. He actually doesn't take those kind of shots. So, you know, that helps the longevity some. I'd like to still maybe at this later date, I'd like to still see him maybe get to be as big as I thought he could be. And obviously that's got to start with winning Saturday night.
Yeah, and that Fonfara Smith Jr. is one of those things that just kind of brings us back to earth and go, oh, wait, I don't make money for a living matchmaking, you know? I don't. But in the same breath, the people that do got hit that night too, you know? So and it is kind of fun how that works. Like, I love talking about the matchups. I love this. I love that. But I also try to humble myself at times and go, oh, wait a second. Hold on now. There might be something to this, and I just remember watching a fight, even the fight that he broke his jaw, and I was like, huh, this guy does have some potential. Like I said, I picked Fonfara, clearly. But and some of it was just the wave of, oh, this is a shitty fight on network TV too, which is what we got a lot of early on when they're, you know, whether they were or not, some of them were, some of them weren't. But it would kind of get thrown into the bag of, oh, no, that's just a shitty fight. They're going to screw this deal up. It's all fucked up, you know, that type of thing. But, yeah, all of a sudden Smith Jr. pops off in front of a large audience. It is, yeah, in hindsight, you're right. It really looks, you look at it and you go, huh, he could have been a pretty damn good ticket seller, man. Yeah, it's interesting. Well, I appreciate you staying so long tonight, and we definitely will talk that American boxing scene, whether it's the folks on top of it, whether it's, you know, those contenders that are starting to be in their prime or all the way in their prime, or the prospects climbing that ladder, because there is a whole lot of them.
Yeah, looking forward to doing that next week with you, Chris.
All right, John, you take it easy. Have a good one.
Okay, Chris, good being with you.
Yes, sir. Take it easy. Yep. All righty. Always fun talking to John. I say it repeatedly. He's got a great boxing mind because he does. And he's pretty blunt with stuff. I like that, where he's just like, you know, I'm going to say this, but then he can turn around the next week and go, I said this, and I was wrong. Or this is why I said this. And, you know, I just like how, you know, the boxing mind in a variety of ways, whether it's matchups, whether it's prospects coming along, and how he can relate it to the past and what maybe he reminds himself or, you know, if something reminds him of a fighter, yada, yada, yada. Anyway, that's funny because I did read that text, and it is a little misleading when I should have cleared that up. But we will talk the American fight scene next week. And the reason why I say that is because, you know, no offense to Jake Paul, but there's not like, it's not a deep schedule next week. So that's kind of a segment where we can kind of go off on a little bit. And so we made it a part two, part one, part two, and all that good stuff. I do think, going to look good early, and I think Lipinets is going to touch him more than once. I do think that Ennis does have – John made a good point about, you know, sometimes he does not load up, but he may throw some quick combos. And sometimes they look great. Other times it is like he does miss something, but it's good to score points that way. But I do feel like he likes to linger. Sometimes he'll linger on the ropes a little bit too. And he is looking to blast you out of there, let's be honest. So I do think Ennis, though, will be a little bit more responsible fully. I'm not saying he can't be responsible and be a boxer and box the whole fight. I think he can. You know, it's just a matter of if he puts his mind to it. I talked about Jamal James doing that too. It does look like Ennis, though. The thing is, if you're going to want to take somebody out, guess what? It leaves you open. So I think Lipinets, in the way he was able to do that with Mikey, although it's a different style, you could say both of them are really talented, but, you know, Garcia's not going to be moving all over the place, especially at 140 against Lipinets. He moved a lot, you know, against Spence after a while, but Lipinets just lit him up a couple times, like several times, I should say, in that fight. And I really want to see Ennis not just take those punches, what he does mentally after that. Not like, oh, he's going to cower. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about, like, what is his game plan after that? Does he try to go tit for tat? I'm going to get you back. You just made me look bad. We see that with plenty of fighters, especially with guys that have that kind of knockout rate. But Ennis can also wait for something big and score points in the meantime. And I think he does a good job at that. His work rate, his combinations, they can be flashy and powerful. I like him to win, but, yeah, I really feel like – I kind of feel like both these fights – Stanionis and Delorme, I think they're going to play out somewhat similar. As far as not the style, because, you know, I don't look at either of the co-feature. I don't look at either of them really moving, you know, circling, pivoting, stepping to the side, taking a half a step back, trying to dodge a punch, you know, that type of thing. But Stanionis, once he gets going, man, he really is trying to take your head off. But he does it responsible for a while. It sounds kind of funny, but I think he's getting better at that. I mentioned earlier, sometimes, I don't know, it's like he's trying to throw every punch with all his might, and we've seen that over and over again, and it does seem like he's adapted. I mean, this is 13th fight. These are step-up fights. I got Boots by decision. Could he knock him out? Yeah. Could he TKO him? Yeah. But I'm going to go by a clean decision. What are the odds on that? Actually, let me look at it really quick. Kind of forgot to check. Yeah. Damn. Holy shit. Five Dimes has plus 950 for Lipinets? I've seen him in the 4, 5, 6 range. I see. Sports Bet has a plus 1,062. Wow. Huh. That's intense. I would have thought the 5 range, plus 550, plus 600 maybe, plus 4. So if you're feeling Lipinets, you say, hey, you know, I like him as an underdog. Go for it. But I just think Lipinets is a good fighter. I mean, he just gets hit too much. You know, I mean, look at that Peterson fight. That was a great fight. But clearly Lamont was on his last leg, and he scored the knockout and everything like that. I don't know. I just want to see what happens. Like, I think Delorme are going to get it on. What, you know, I don't know if it'll be the first round or the fourth round or whatever. But they're going to be – that fight is going to take place in the middle of the ring, or Delorme slightly on the move. Whereas I think Lipinets might be hunting too much, and that's where he's going to get picked apart. But I want to see Ennis and see if he can stick to the game plan the whole time.
for if he does try to go for it. But I see both of them winning by clean decision, but taking some battle wounds, if that makes sense. I also think Conor Benn will beat Samuel Vargas. Don't really think that there's that big of a deal there. Bridges and Courtenay is also a fight that some UK fans are kind of excited about. Kind of also, you know, Bridges is a clear underdog. I see her at, like, I think the best is plus 400. Five is the highest I see right now. That's on Five Dimes as well. I like Courtenay. I think she's got some pretty damn good skill. I've seen her fight twice, seen some highlights. Bridges, just, I think this is just a step too far. And I'm not trying to just dog her as, oh, she's hot, you know, and that's it. She looks like she can fight somewhat. I just don't know if she's ready for that. It'll be interesting to see Efe Ajagba, who's a clear favorite over Brian Howard, but just to get him back. Jared Anderson as well, the prospect heavyweight. What is he, 8-0 now? Something like that, maybe 10-0. He's taking on Jeremiah Carpency. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. Yeah, that's about it for the preview. We still have 8 minutes of the live stream left. If you're listening to it in the browser right now, you might as well dial 646-381-4990. That's 646-381-4990. That'll get you to be able to listen to the whole show right now instead of just later. I see a variety of folks on there, a lot of people just hanging out, a lot of familiar faces. How's everybody doing? I hope you're doing good. Remember that rain I was telling you about? It rained earlier today. It was just going off maybe 20 minutes ago, lightning everywhere. But we're good now. Doesn't look like anybody lost power around here. I'm looking down the block a little bit, but some of that lightning was pretty crazy. But anyway, there will be, you know, a couple items that we're going to get to. Adrian Broner, once again on IG, talking, go figure. I think he should just, well, I don't think he should do some of the stuff he talks about on IG in the message, but I think he should just go then. Like, I'll talk about it in a little bit. We'll talk about that Tim Tszyu offer from his people they're talking about. Eddie Hearn mentions some stuff about comparing himself to the UFC, or not himself, but, you know, what he's building. And also his next deal, we're really lined up. We've got a couple of Showtime fights that should be announced very soon. The college basketball tournament got over last night. Normally it'd be, looking at my calendar, about give or take 10 days, and the NBA playoffs would start. But they got a late start, so they're actually not starting till like third week in May. So I say that to say this, it'd be a good time this week or next week to drop the late spring summer fight schedule for Showtime. You know, a couple weeks ago, I heard there were from a very good source that you know, they were two opponents away from being able to release their full schedule. They do have some fights, though, that we've heard solid, let's say, rumors about. And it's interesting. I did get a little bit of feedback from my PBC on Fox segment last week. Kind of both sides. You know, it's funny because I actually wrote an article on the Grueling Truth in Eastside Boxing 247 about this too, and you can check it out there. It's right at the Grueling Truth or wherever you want. You can find it at Ropadope Radio as well on Twitter, and Facebook and whatnot. And basically, it was like, where's the beef? You know, like, what's up with this? And I went over a variety of things, just like I did on the show, a little bit different detail maybe in the article. But you know, it's either like, dude, just face it, they're gone, their money's dried up. That type of thing, or, you know,
Well, the money's dried up thing is like they're losing all this money on pay-per-views. And like they had already lost all this money on pay-per-views, which wasn't true. You know, it's just not true. So, but in the other realm, it's like, why, you know, everybody had a moment where they had weak stuff. And to an extent, that is true. I mean, you know, the first June and July, the first 10 weeks or whatever on ESPN, you know, to be fair, they were the first out for boxing. Some of it did suck. I mean, a lot of it did. Some of it was really good, though. We did get some good fights. We got some highlight stuff. We got an upset, stuff like that. But, yeah, of course, it wasn't – you could just tell how they were paying the fighters what kind of quality that we were getting on some of those cards. Or even the broadcasters say, you know, this fight, this six-rounder wouldn't be taking place on television if it wasn't for this coronavirus because you couldn't have people come here and all that. But ESPN's, you know, the fall kicked in. They dominated the competition down the stretch of last year. DAZN was a little wishy-washy, took them a little while to get back, kind of pissed some people off by keep charging them. I was able to pause it on my Roku, but I know plenty of people had some issues, and that was kind of BS. And they did, you know, it took them a while to get going. But the first quarter, they had it, you know. So I guess some folks message saying, dude, you know, you're being too hard on it. And it's like, well, they've been back for a while now, though. They came back in August, and they have yet to, like the FS1 cards. I did say there's a great chance that they're just going to double up for, let's say, May, June, July, I don't know, June, July, whatever, that they're going to probably double up. Instead of just once a month, they'll do two a month, you know. Maybe that's the case. I'm not saying that that's not the case. I mean, that's exactly what I said. But I was just going, oh, like that's what I like to do, is go over everything and make an accumulation of everything and go, okay, now logic tells me it's either this, that, or that, and I'm thinking it's this, blah, 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 blah. So, but there's just a lot of misinformation out on it, but in the same breath, you know, we are not, the budget is not what it was, and maybe even that earmarked money for the Wilder Fury, just because they were only getting 40% of it, it's still money, you know. We don't know how big a star Fury is right now here. To be fair, he could be that fight on a rematch could do a million, you never know. And we were talking about white fighters. Well, he talks shit, and he's a white fighter. He could be a big deal here now. They did a huge gate. You know, like I said, that could do, considering the rematch that, you know, the hardcores aren't really interested in it, the casuals might be all over it, dude. And Tyson Fury's the biggest deal here right now. He could, you never know. We got to see it. We got to see the crowd. We got to see everything. So you just never know. You gotta, you know, it sucks that the coronavirus messed stuff up, because that fight would have happened in July. You know what I mean? We would have found out right away what kind of dent Tyson Fury, you know, put into this public by winning that way. And of course in the UK, yeah, but I'm talking about the US. If he could start to do major pay-per-views and major gates, you know, who knows? Anyway, like I said, I just went over it in a variety of ways. And if you're just straight up boxing fan and you're not worried about which side is this, that, and the other, you're just looking at all the factors. That's really all it was. You know what I mean? So a couple people did get in to the last part of the show. So that's cool. As far as, well, let's actually, we were talking about Tim Tszyu and his handlers were saying something really interesting. May get a quality fighter out there. This is from BoxingScene.com. Tim Zoo handlers ready to spend $10 million to bring a title fight to Australia. Now, Pacquiao, with that huge name, got a bunch of money, right? I actually want to say it was like 10 or 15 million. I'm not totally sure. Don't quote me on that. But I know that they did get behind that fight. It was in a big stadium, obviously. Most people don't think that Horn won the fight, that there was some home cooking. But, you know, I don't think Pacquiao took that fight serious enough, you know. So that's partly on him because, you know, had he taken it serious, maybe he would have stopped him the very next round. What was it, the ninth round that he had him hurt? Anyway, he's now, Tim Zhu is now the number one contender with the WBO. Is that the one? Castaño just won that, right? So they're probably not, and he was the, I bring that up because obviously the PBC and stuff, but I don't think they'll call a Mando for a little while now because wasn't he the mandatory? But anyway, you know, they're talking about, hey, they're ready to pay a sum. George Rose of No Limit Boxing. Why they got to do Master P like that? It is around that figure, he told the Sun Herald. And it is just what we have to do to make it. The way I see it, the world title has to be out here in Australia. That's the situation we're in. That's what we need to come up with to make it happen. We want a world title, and we want it in Australia. Whether it's Charlo or Castaño, they are the targets. Timmy has to fight for a world title here in Australia, especially given the times we're in with the COVID, of course. Australia is the best location for it. When you bring in our international fighters, the costs go through the roof to get the quality opposition. It will cost a lot, so we need to take a look at where it's feasible to do that. I don't know. I mean, that'd be a lot of money. He said it's around there. Maybe it's $10 million for the fight, you know, and then you split that. I don't know. But, you know, I don't know. To say it has to be there, you know, I mean, he's not the champion. And, you know, I don't know if they know this, but Texas is open too, you know, like wide open. So now who knows in the next month or two if something were to happen to where they have all these huge crowds like they're going to have at the Canelo fight. And who knows? But, you know, I think a Charlo Zoo fight would obviously draw a bigger crowd in Australia, you know, obviously, but he's going to have to pay some real money to get him there because, you know, if you don't knock him out, I mean, that's just how it goes, especially when you're the champion and he's saying, well, the fight has to take place here. Well, you're going to have to really put up some money because otherwise, because that's what talks, you know what I mean? Because otherwise, just saying it needs to be here, this is what we want. We want our guy to get a home fight for a championship fight. Well, shit, you know, take a number, get in line. No shit, everybody wants that, you know. We'll see if you got the money to do it, though. So, like I said, Castaño or Charlo, you know, nowhere near the name of Pacquiao, you know what I mean? But we'll see. That'd be fun as hell to see that. Hearn's talking about, you know, Hearn will make a decision. This is boxing scene as well. Hearn will make a decision on a new UK broadcaster deal within 2 weeks, and this was written 2 days ago. So by Ron Lewis, he's in between. Obviously, Sky is coming to an end this summer. Sky Sports. He's had for the last 7 years exclusive deal with them as far as it pertains to the UK. You know, I mean, they do a lot of pay-per-views on Sky, so I'm sure they don't want to lose that. But they need to, they're going to need to up the budget, you know. And Eddie Hearn said that plenty of times. They're going to have to up the budget fairly significantly, in my opinion. And, you know, it's hard to get a lot of coverage for the zone. Like even that Jake Paul fight, right? I've heard the radio ad on a sports radio show during the afternoon driving around three times now. The funny thing is they keep saying Thriller. The dude, it's not Triller, Triller, but it doesn't really matter because you don't even need the app. You could buy it like an auto pay for you if you want. My point is, you know, beyond like some of that first year that, you know, the fight season and I did see more ads for Canelo and Jacobs and all that, but of late, the marketing just hasn't been that good. We'll see if it improves for the Billy Joe Saunders. Even online, it's just been okay. And if you look at Google Trends and whatnot, Canelo's not growing. And I bring this up because throughout the year, boxing can be the second biggest sport in the UK, where that's obviously not the case here. So for the zone, if they weren't afraid to invest money here, you know, they shouldn't be, you know, afraid to invest money in the UK, obviously. And they're already open anyway. So he says that there's four broadcasters that have made offers to the UK or for a UK deal, including Sky. We're in discussions. We may well extend the deal. Of course, we know DAZN are extremely aggressive in the space at the moment. And, you know, that it'd be really great to get that market down, you know, because it's so popular where you can literally get a lot of people to sub. And once again, you're saving them money. You can do the exact same routine that you did here. Because a lot of people don't realize Sky, just to have Sky Sports, it's a fair amount. And Sky Sports doesn't mean you that's all cable. Like, you know, to get ESPN, you have to have cable, right? But cable is, you know, a lot of different channels and a lot of different on-demand stuff, including all the sports. Besides, some of the sports are on, like, NFL, a good chunk. Some of it's on ESPN. Some of it's, you know, but a lot of it's on, you know, Fox or NBC or CBS. So it's kind of a, you know, NFL is huge like that, so they can get away with it. But all the other sports are really on cable for the most part. The NBA will do Saturday nights on ABC, free to air. They start that late January, and they'll do that. But they don't put all the ABC, you know, they put all the finals are on ABC, but it's not like they put ABC on, you know, the sport, the games on, the playoff games on ABC the whole time. They do have some on Saturday night in Sunday afternoon or Sunday afternoon, but a lot of it's on TNT and ESPN, which is cable. My point is just to get a bunch of sports, so it'd be like, and then you still have cable. So, you know, it costs a lot for Sky Sports, and then there's pay-per-views. And I know they're not – they're a third of what they cost here normally. But still, you know, we only had to pay anywhere from $8 to $12 or something like that for HBO, you know, on top of the pay-per-views, obviously. But, you know, a lot of UK folks, you know, have said that over the years, that people don't realize Sky Sports is actually kind of expensive per month. Now, if you're a sports fiend, you're boxing, soccer, all that, you know, it's awesome. But when you can talk them into, well, hold on, if I can get all that for $10, or it's actually cheaper there right now, we'll see. He said it's a very difficult decision. He also talked, we're very close to making a decision. We had four offers, blah, 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 blah. It's extremely, difficult decision for us, but it's flattering. And then he goes on to talk about the global landscape, which obviously DAZN has been, you know, pretty big in that, growing some of that, no doubt about it. And this is where he kind of led it into. Well, he also said, you know, Sky's been there for us. And so we won't forget that. Anyone can come out and say they're going to take over boxing, but without significant TV deal, you're absolutely, there's no chance. We did talk about the Wasserman deal with the Sutherland stuff. You know, I talked about that last week. And they probably are looking at, hey, I want that, you know. But he went on to say, you know, some other items. You know, we've got no, wait a second. You also understand that if I was to make a broadcast move, it would be for a reason. We've got no reason to leave Sky outside of something that would change our life, our vision for the sport, and our fighters' lives as well. I think it's great that someone else is making play in boxing, but I don't think it affects anything we're doing or anything in the UK space. People ask me about Triller and things like that. It's basically that anyone who wants to stick money into the game is good news. In order to be a force, you need a major TV deal with a huge budget. I've seen a lot of people saying, you know, the Wasserman thing hit the Sky, but we haven't made a decision yet. Sky aren't just going to replace us with B options. Well, not even B options, whatever options. They're going to lose a huge powerhouse of subscription driver. He starts to say, but he has his sights high on growing Matchroom's power even more, saying he wants to make them the boxing equivalent to the UFC. We turned our business, I think it's supposed to be, around in America. We have Canelo out there as well. We had a show in Uzbekistan. We were in Gibraltar. We were in Miami, then Barcelona, Manchester with a pay-per-view, then Dallas, Milan. We are the global force. We are probably the only global force. There's no one else touching what we are doing or even making a charge globally. We are set to become the UFC of boxing. It's only a matter of time. Now, the UFC of boxing would be, you'd have to take over the market in the U.S. to do that, because the UFC of boxing, the UFC did, you know, in Brazil, in Europe, other places than that too, have expanded, you know, no doubt about it, for sure. And how many pay-per-views they can do worldwide and whatnot too, I think that's huge. They got a lot of deals nationally or, you know, internationally and all that, but they are the number one here, and their biggest money is off of the ESPN deal and revenue from pay-per-view and the gate and whatnot. So you got to take the U.S. over to be the UFC of boxing. And, you know, when DAZN came out, some people thought, oh, it'll be easy to get 1.5 million people to subscribe every month, no problem, you know, but it's not that easy. I keep telling people, like, it's tough. When you look at some of those ratings, 100,000, 150,000, 200,000, 300,000 tops, you know, that's the hardcore level. And casual fans or common casual fans, whatever you want to say, you know, I don't know. It is what it is. We'll see, though. We'll definitely see. I will get to a couple of other items in a second, of course. We got a couple messages saying you're not going to forget the boxing Twitter segment. No, I'm not. Boxing Twitter segment is going to happen. I got a couple of doozies, both good and bad. But I really like that Garcia-Javier Fortuna fight. I really like that. Some of the reasons, you know, I already said, same with John. I agree with a lot of them. The hand speed, although Fortuna could just freaking wing his shots and get caught himself. You know what I mean? He's that type of fighter. But he has some serious pop and some damn good experience. And I just want to see it. I really want to see that fight. I like it. Would I rather see him against Tank? Yeah. But, you know, it is what it is. I really like this fight, though. I think Fortuna has some slickness to him, minorly. He's got some movement and hand speed, but his defense is shaky. So I think, you know, I actually think whoever wins this fight will get knocked out. I really do. I do think that. I'm favoring Ryan Garcia, but if that shin gets exposed minorly like it did, not just on the knockdown with the punch he didn't see from Luke Campbell, but, man, he got hit with a bunch of shots in that fight. And if you're going to get hit like that with Fortuna, he's probably going to make you pay more than Luke Campbell. You can make a, a debate argument that Campbell has different skills. He's a little bit more fundamental, all that good stuff. Sure, no doubt about it. But I don't know. I think Fortuna's quicker. Now, when is the last time Fortuna fought? Actually, I won't go too far down this because it's going to happen. It's going to happen. In July, it actually sounds like. We'll get to a couple of these Showtime bouts in a second. Get to see what Adrian Broner said on IG. He says so many things, dude. Some of it is just like, what are you waiting for? But this whole 100 million, 200 million thing, you're trying to stop me? It's like, so if there's someone out there where you can say in six fights you're going to make 100 million, what have you been doing? Like, a lot of it's just like, what, dude? And some of it, I don't know. We'll get into that in just a second. I am, I'm actually going to go out to Portland, see if he's ready, actually. I just saw his text now. I'll see in just a second. See if he's ready to go. I'm going to go ahead and get out to Portland, and then we'll talk about a variety of other stuff before we shut this thing down. 503 Portland, what's going on, man? How the hell are you, buddy?
Mexicanos al grito de guerra, el acero apretado y el rigor, y retiemble en sus centros la tierra al sonoro rugir del cañón.
Yo, yo, what up, what up, yo, what up, Chris? Yo, I'm doing good. Here in the beautiful, sunny-ass Oregon today, man. Spring has come alive here. It's getting better every day, brother. But how you doing, brother?
I'm doing great, man. In Minnesota, spring came alive too, dude. Like, we just had kind of a wicked thunderstorm, lightning storm a second ago. I was looking outside my window. Had one last night. It was 82 degrees yesterday, like 77 the day before. In Minnesota, though, you never know if that's going to turn into sleet in a couple of days and then be 80 again. But, yeah, man, I'm doing good, man.
Yeah, good to hear, brother. Yeah, man, just with this cold-ass winter behind us, man, it's getting better, you know. So, but, yeah, man, what a hell of a fight this last weekend. Jamel Herring versus, what's his name, Carl Frampton, dude. That was a good fight, dude. You know, that was a little – if I could mention something, man, you just see the size of that ring – dude, that was once we saw that, man, we're like, oh, dude, something bad's about to happen, because like those are like those rings, right? That they usually we see in solo book sale, usually in the Mexico fights, that was a dope fight though for what it lasted, but Carl Frampton, gave it his all. He obviously, if I could say, I think Herring just like had the better reach advantage. And I think that's what took place, and like the power eventually got to him. And what a finish for Herring, man. You know what I mean? So shout out to him, and he moves on with his career. And so I believe Carl Frampton just retired, announced his retirement from this fight. So big shout out to him. Hell of a career. Gave us those two Santa Cruz fights, which were dope. Shout out to that. Those were two big events. What a good fight for what it lasted. And I didn't know this fight was in Dubai or out there in the Middle East, right? And that was cool, man. I think both fighters got paid pretty good, so that's a big plus for them too. So shout out to them. Jamel Herring moves on with his career, out there, man, doing it at 35. Shout out to him. That was a big spectacular win. Is Stevenson a possibility, or are they too much of friends?
I don't know, man. I'm not sure. I mean, they've talked about how they're going to get it. You know, they do it anyway. I really don't know what Herring's thinking. I do know that Stevenson already has a fight in June. So that, you know, it wouldn't happen next. Plus, he cut that eye again, so he's going to need a little bit more time.
Yeah.
So it may work out good for him to so he can wait to the fall to have a fight. And I had actually kind of forgotten about to say, you know, I'm glad you brought it up. Carl Frampton, you know, giving us a lot of good fights. And I do remember that fighter of the year and that great performance, especially in the first fight. It was kind of just he put it all together that night. And, you know, the last couple of years, you could see his body was kind of failing him. And, you know, as he went up in weight class, it was a little rough for him. But, yeah, man. Frampton, you know, had a great career. He made some good money, especially for his weight class. So all respect to him. Kind of feel bad that I forgot to mention that when I was talking about the fight.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know. I really don't know. I know there's not a – unless they – I don't know. Oscar Valdez and Herring, you know, a lot of people talking about a unification. But I just – I don't see it next because – Stevenson actually, like, waited for this fight, and so he is due this fight, so he could really challenge it, and if Herring didn't want the fight, then he would have to drop the belt, because, you know, he's in that range, so I don't know if that'll be next. He's going to just weigh all his options. I mean, there could be a point where he drops the belt, you know, and Stevenson fights somebody else in the WBO, and then he fights Oscar Valdez. I really don't know.
Yeah, well, I hope it gets made, because that seems like a pretty interesting fight, and because I knew that they're kind of like in the same camp, kind of ish, or they are. But I know they're friendly with each other. So, so that's why I wanted to mention that. But man, hopefully they can make it. Maybe, you know, just for a while still. You know, let friends, you know, just, you know, kind of, I mean, be friends, but, like, I don't know, let's do it, you know what I mean, have the fight. You know, both guys get paid pretty good, so, but the Valdez fight would be dope, too, you know, but I don't know. But as far as that, I thought that, because I only saw the main event for that fight, I'm not going to lie, that was pretty good. And but as far as that, what else we got? We got this weekend, Joe Smith Jr., Maxim Vlasov, man. I think, you know, this is a fight that was supposed to happen a while back, and because something happened with his opponent, right? Is this the same fight?
Yeah, Vlasov got COVID. This was supposed to happen in February.
Mm. Okay. Yeah. So you know, I'm happy for Smith too, man, for getting a fight almost pretty close to his last date when it was supposed to happen, because, you know, this guy's a working man, you know, he's out there like the 9-to-5ers, you know, shout out to him, man, you know, doing his thing. So, you know, I'm definitely catching this one. But the fight of the weekend, man, the Saturday card with the Showtime, that shit, you know, Jerron Ennis,
yeah.
Sergey Lipinets, you guys were talking about it earlier, man. I think this fight is the one, in all honesty, for, like, fight fans to – kind of pay more attention to, just because it's like this is a big step for Jerron Ennis, if I'm not mistaken, right? This is pretty good. So
yeah,
you know, let's see what he's about. You know what I mean? Let's see what he's about. You know, Sergey Lipinets, you know, he's pretty good. You know, he's a pretty good solid opponent. I believe we have, you know, what he did with what's his name, Lamont Peterson. You know, we saw what he did with him. This is a good fight, man, for Jerron Ennis. So let's see what he has. If he could, you know, hang in there with the bad, because I think this guy's a pretty good solid puncher, man, Sergey Lipinets. So, but yeah, that's I think that card is like the one to talk about this weekend. And but it's on Showtime, so I'm definitely watching this one using the subscription. So, but yeah, man, as far as that too, what else we had? In all honesty too, man, if I could be excited about a fight that's coming up, man, and you know, Chris, I tweeted you about it, man, and it was that June 19th fight, man, Chavez Jr. Anderson Silva, man. You know, I'm not particularly big on, you know, kind of these big kind of weird fights, but man, this one, let's see. Yo, let's see. Hopefully Chavez Jr., man, he's holding, you know, boxing with him. You know what I mean? He's representing boxing. So, I don't know. This is definitely an exciting fight for me, like for a fight fan, you know what I mean? Because this one, I mean, not a lot of people are excited. We all know Chavez Jr., you know, he always feels impressed. He disappoints his dad. He disappoints Mexico. And then, but, man, I cannot hate and not root for Chavez Jr. in this fight, man. And if this is I believe this is pay-per-view. So I'm definitely buying this one. Just, I don't know. So I don't know. To me, I'm excited, man. Like, in Mexico, I don't know, man. I'm excited for this one for June 19th out of all the fights, you know what I mean? So out of what's coming up, you know, forward, you know what I mean, with what's up next and stuff. So yeah, man, if I could just mention that real fast and all that. And also, too, Chris, are you by any chance, are you excited about that YouTuber, what's his name, Paul and Ashton?
Jake Paul?
Are you excited about that? Or yeah, are you excited about it? Or at all kind of
no.
interested? No?
I mean,
I don't know, man. A vague interest,
but I'm not going to buy it.
You're not going to buy it? Hey, man, I'm going to buy it, man. This is kind of an interesting fight. Let's see. You know, everybody wants to kind of see his two knockouts, right? But he's not really a boxer. You know what I mean? He hasn't been through the gauntlet, like the real, real tough, you know what I mean? This is kind of interesting to me. I don't know. I feel like Ashken maybe could pull this off, you know what I mean? So we'll see, man. I just believe that this is kind of an interesting fight for anybody to be interested in, whatever. So I don't know, because to me, I'm kind of excited about that one. But just to, like, just see if this dude could really prove it, man. Like, if he gets – I mean, he's obviously an MMA dude, but, like, I mean, he's – if you've seen his credentials, like, his wrestling background, because I got to say, man, those wrestlers, man, in all honesty, man, they're tough. You know what I mean? Nothing but respect to, you know, those wrestlers out there, amateur wrestlers. You know what I mean? They're built tough and, you know, they have a strong mentality.
They're tougher when they can use their wrestling, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
a lot of times
they're
not
definitely
that good at fighting, you know? Have you seen this guy fight? Have you seen him throw punches? Have you seen the
Asking, I have. yeah, they're pretty bad.
Like?
You know, they're pretty god awful, but the thing is.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're not, you know what I mean? It's nothing, you know, you laugh at it. I mean, I've seen it, I laugh at it. But I just believe, I don't know, we'll see what's up, man. I mean, he's out there with Freddie Roach. He's out there with K-9, you know what I mean? He's getting into it, you know what I mean? Like he said before, he's not fighting a real boxer. He's fighting some YouTuber that, you know, is trying to capitalize in his boxing, you know, game that we have. And, you know, using your, you know what I mean? He's doing that. So I don't, because I've never seen that dude as a real boxer. So it's just an interesting fight to me. I don't know. I don't know. You know what I mean? Because I'm not looking forward to anything else. You know what I mean? Like, you know, sports-wise, you know what I mean? So these are the kind of things I'm actually excited about. So, but other than that, yeah. And also, too, man, if I could say, mention real quick, Javier Fortuna versus the young kid, Ryan Garcia, man, this one, yo, this one is awesome. I believe this one I wanted Devin Haney, Fortuna, but this one is pretty damn solid, man. And I got to give a shout out to the kid, Ryan Garcia, for making this happen, because this one, I believe this one's tough, man. That dude's wild, and I think he's got a hell of a chin. Javier Fortuna. So, I think this is a pretty damn good solid fight, and, like, you know, back to back for the kid, man. And you can't do nothing but respect that, you know what I mean? Because I don't know if you got a chance on the other show, Chris, the Box Voice. Did you get to follow what was going on between the Haney camp and the Fortuna camp with the managers and promoter? Interacting with each other. Did you follow that?
Yeah, I've had some large segments on that on the show. Yes, definitely.
Okay. Yeah, man, because, like, I was following that. I wanted the Haney fight for Fortuna, because that seems a solid fight for Haney, because I think, you know, Linares is a good fight for Haney, but I don't know. I wanted more Fortuna, in all honesty, if I could get a wish, you know, for the Dominican fighters. So, but as far as that, Ryan Garcia, I thought, you know, I believe this is a solid fight for him. So but other than that, man, he's actually about it, you know what I mean? So if I could say that, you know what I mean? Because it's all about, you know, proven shit, you know what I mean? So, but yeah, man, and as far as that, you know, yo, and also, too, and what's his name, Oscar La Hoya coming back, what's his name, Fernando Vargas coming back, man, it seems like, man, these legendary, or not, you know, I mean, you know what I mean, these legendary fighters, yeah. They're all coming back, you know, Tyson, you know, Mike Tyson and all that. If I can mention real quick, man, to me, it's exciting. I am watching those, all of them, because it just seems like just supporting this just gets, you know, it gets people more excited. You know what I mean? Like let's see what happens, man. You know, we all saw what happened with Tyson. They came out good. You know, nothing bad happened. So, you know what I mean? So, and these guys look like they're already in tremendous shape. You know, if you've been following them on IG, like, you know, they've been showing how physically strong they are. So, but yeah, I don't know, man. If they could get this, like, these fights going on, because, like, I believe, what's his name, Oscar La Hoya said, he's fighting some MMA dude, UFC, ex-guy, I don't know what's going on, but, you know, these kind of fights, let's make them happen, man. You know what I mean? It's all about entertainment now in these days. It's all about having fun, watching boxing and, you know, enjoying it and just getting entertained by it. Like, I have no more, you know what I mean? Like, I don't believe, like, boxing owes me anything anymore. Like, I'm just, like, if these fights get made, let's talk about them. Let's be excited about them. And, like, that is not, like, you know, let's not shut it down, you know what I mean, all of a sudden, just because you don't like it. But, you know what I mean? Like, they're exciting, man. If these fights could be made, let's make them, man. Because, you know, Triple G, what's he doing? He's doing nothing. You know what I mean? So, we'll see, man. But as far as that, you know, Chris, let me get out of here. Let me thank you for having me on Viva Ropa Dope Radio and Viva Mexico.
Thank you very much, man. I appreciate it. Take it easy, man. Thanks for calling in. I actually just watched a little highlight of Astron. And, you know, it's tough to say because he's trying to wrestle. You know what I mean? So it's really tough to say. Like, you can't really judge it because he's, like, he's not even really using a jab, but he's not trying to land punches. He's trying to wrestle. So it's tough to decipher if he can throw a good punch or not. I just watched his one of his fights while you were talking, too, just to get a feel for it. I plan on doing a little bit more of that. And, you know, I think you cannot hate on something, but also not buy it. You know, like, I remember Oscar De La Hoya saying that it's a farce for Mayweather and McGregor to fight. That's a farce. Now, we know behind the scenes, he did call the Nevada Athletic Commissioner right to him and say Canelo will fight him, you know, McGregor. But my thing is, it's like Oscar coming back to fight an MMA fighter, I just have no interest in paying for it. Come back and get your money. I'm not hating on it. But I also think you can just not buy it, too. Like, I think that's okay, too. It's kind of like the Teofimo Lopez Cambosos fight. I'm glad he got his money. You know, he got shortchanged against Loma. He's making more money than what the market in boxing was going to pay him. So good for him. That's awesome. But I'm also not going to pay for that as a main event of a pay-per-view. And I don't really call that – I'm not saying this, that you said this, Portland. I just see this out there. Why are people hating? Well, I'm not hate. To not buy something doesn't mean I'm hating. And like I said, Portland, I'm not saying you're saying that. I'm just talking about it because you brought it up. I think it's a good topic to talk about. But I guess it does make a difference if you've seen these guys in their prime, too. And I think that's the biggest thing about Mike Tyson and Roy Jones and maybe Holyfield, although it sounds like Holyfield is with Triller, so I don't really know how that's going to work. But I've already seen their best fights live. But I can understand because my nephews and people younger than me are like, dude, I never got to experience a Tyson fight. And so I can appreciate that. I just think when I think of pay-per-view, I don't think of Roy Jones. What Mike and Roy just gave us, I don't think personally, I know why people are buying it, but I don't think that's worthy of a pay-per-view in my mind, not off what they can make off it. Like I said, come back, Get your money. I think it's awesome you're getting your money. I think it's awesome that these guys are spending time working out. It's only constructive. Some of these guys have had some major stuff in their life. Oscar De La Hoya has had a lot of issues. Well, if he can have a goal and if he can have something that keeps his mind right and something to focus on, I'm happy for him. I'm very happy for him. And Tyson and Oscar are different because, you know, part of it is I don't think it's hating to say, remember, Oscar was the guy that said pay-per-view's dead. He was against the Mayweather-McGregor. Pay-per-view's dead. Now he's fighting a pay-per-view guy or fighting on pay-per-view with an MMA guy, you know? So to me, it's like contradicting as fuck, and I don't think that's hating to say it. I think that's just facts, you know? But if people want to, you know, I've seen Oscar De La Hoya's fights all through his prime, so I don't need to see him against an MMA guy. No, it doesn't mean I won't watch a highlight or watch it. Just like Jake Paul, I'm going to watch it. I'm going to talk about it. I'm definitely not hating on it. And I've said pretty early on, you know, at least Jake Paul is strapping up the gloves and he's taking it serious these last couple of years. The first time I saw him, you know, he's got two professional fights, quote unquote, but he also has that amateur fight because my nephews rented that. It was that $10 KSI and his brother, Logan. And on the undercard, Jake Paul fought. And I looked at it, and I was like, you know, Jake Paul can straight punch, dude. Like, he's way better than his brother or KSI. I think he knocks his brother and KSI out. So I think he straight punches. I know he's serious about it. You know, after his fight, he parties, and then he's right back into camp. And he's focused. And it's like, well, shit, if this guy's got this big, especially youthful, you know, audience, I'd rather him be a boxer than an MMA guy. That's just selfish, but hey, I can see what this does to help the sport, especially when he's talking about, I want to get a bunch of these MMA, you know, fighters in here and show them that this sport is different. And with the MMA, I wrestle too, so I think a street fight is different. But I think that street fights are different in general. Where are we at? Are we in a bar? Are we in a tight area? Can I slam your head on a car or a lamppost? Or, you know, there's a lot of things. Are we meeting after school in an open field? Well, if a wrestler can't get to you because you're in an open field, that means Floyd Mayweather can move around. He's got good footwork. He can be on the move and wait for you to try to take him down and knock you out. You know, so as far as just straight up, once you lock, once an MMA guy has you, I mean, if that's the specialty, usually it's either jiu-jitsu or wrestling. Once that happens, yeah, a boxer, it's going to be tough unless they had experience in that. Real tough. But, you know, it goes both ways is what I'm saying. People say, oh, a fight. Well, sometimes a fight comes down to who landed the first punch. It doesn't come down to a takedown and I'll submit you. You know, so it's is there a bottle nearby? I mean, there's all sorts of shit that could happen in a fight. But no, I just, as long as it's okay not to buy the pay-per-view, but that's not hate. Like, I guess that's my point because I don't need to. See, I'm personally not going to take my night off to watch Oscar and an MMA guy. Now, am I going to watch the fight at some point? Yeah, fuck yeah. I am. Totally. You know? I guess my problem is, and this is definitely not, 503 brought this up, but my problem is you have guys like Mike Coppinger that were dissing, you know, Spence Porter and being on pay-per-view, and they should have found a way to put Wilder and Fury on normal TV and try, you know, lose a bunch of money and that type of thing. So he rents these pay-per-views and say, well, the best product's on pay-per-view. Well, okay, but now he's part of the Triller team. And it's, you know, now he's promoting fights that aren't legit fights on pay-per-view. That's my problem I have. If someone wants to, but for instance, someone that's, is kind of thinking the way a lot of people are, mentioning Portland again because he brought up the topic. I think that, you know, he's not one of those people that do that, though. He supports pretty much everything. Or he's just honest about it. Like, hey, I'm not going to buy this one, but I am going to watch it. I'm watching this. I'm watching that. That's my biggest thing. As long as I can be happy Teofimo's getting paid, but, you know, I don't think that's a main event pay-per-view, and I don't think that's Hayden for thinking that. Now, there might be some music act on there that people – it's all about entertainment value, man. That's it. And nobody can really put a cap on entertainment value because it's in the eye of the beholder, you know? So I think that's I think that's legit. I mean, if you want to watch the fights, watch the fights. My thing is, don't turn around and diss the Charlo card. You know, that's what I'm talking about with Coppinger. You know, he's now part of the team, so he's all out there promoting a fight that's, you know, not a legit main event fight off of his standards, what he told us. Just like Oscar, pay-per-view's dead. Now he's on pay-per-view. Well, which one is it, Oscar? So that's I guess that's my complaint. Well, it's not even it's being critical, but not really. I think it's a straight up, you know, I just don't have interest in that. But that's okay. I'm also older, you know, so I'm also not going to sit there and judge these people to the extent. People were destroying Muhammad Ali, but people don't realize, you know, the exhibitions Muhammad Ali took when he was somewhat still active. You know, the exhibition's not a new thing. A lot of people are blaming Mayweather because of Mayweather-McGregor, but or blaming DAZN for putting Jake Paul on there and Logan Paul, but this shit's actually not new. It's just new now, you know? But, hey, if Triller wants to come in here, they said that they're not going to sign a bunch of fighters to develop, and they just pop in there, and maybe they take Broner. Right, or whatever. Like, I'm all for it. You know, I don't have anything against it. I just don't think, like, for instance, the Tyson Roy Jones, they look good for their age. But let's put it this way. There's just a big difference between the NBA and the three-on-three league with old players, except you're getting punched in the face. Tyson didn't look like he had fun in that ring to me. He looked like he was in trouble is what it looked like to me. Not in trouble, he's getting knocked out, but he was really – he said it after. He said, thank God for the two-minute rounds. Well, an eight-round or two-minute exhibition, like Cotto and Marquez. Dude, Marquez is one of my favorite – is my favorite fighter from the last generation. Am I pumped to watch pay-per-view with him and Cotto? I personally am not. At least these guys aren't as far gone, though. You know, these guys are nowhere near as far gone. And is that going to be a real fight or is it going to be an exhibition? To me, I just didn't think watching Tyson against Roy Jones was worth pay-per-view personally. That's all. You know, two-minute rounds, maybe some great body shots, but, you know, I don't know. But in the same time, I'm contradicting because I'm like, well, I need it to be a real fight. But I don't want them to be in real fights where they're going to get effed up because that's where you can do some real damage. And that's why all these are exhibitions, because they can kind of play with that a little bit where it's like, well, this is for entertainment value, and I respect that. The Chavez Jr., though, that's kind of interesting because Chavez Jr., like, to hold the throne for boxing and rely on Chavez Jr. is a tough one. It's like, ooh, come on, Jr., you got to help us out here. You got to win as a boxer. And I just don't trust him. He should be able to beat him, but, man, I remember the Roy Jones fight years ago, literally like 10 years ago, people talked about Silva and Jones, and it just never, you know, it never happened. But, yeah, the Chavez-Silva, it's not that I don't have any interest in these, but to rely on Chavez Jr. to stand up and represent boxing is probably the most competitive out of all the cross stuff where you go, well, fuck, dude. Silva's older. God, Chavez lately has been putting up – is this just a money grab? Is he going in there 100%? Could he get beat? You know, as far as 50-50 and all that, or competitive fights or whatever, that one kind of stands out as one where you're like, damn, dude, that actually might be a really good fight. Speaking of really good fights, though, couple of Showtime fights that haven't been, you know, they're going to do their rollout, supposedly, but there are some fights that haven't been fully announced, but they're going to happen. Erickson Luba against, Rosario. Lubin and Rosario. Big shots to Rosario, dude. I mean, went from freaking J-Rock to Charlo to now Lubin. I really like this. It's a 12-rounder. It's going to be on Showtime. The dates are May 15th, 22nd, or 29th. It's kind of all over the place as far as, well, it's not all over the place. They probably have a date, but that's just all we know right now. But Lubin and Rosario, dude, sign me up because Rosario can pop, and he's going to be in it to win it. You know what I mean? So I like that fight. Another fight that I really liked that was supposed to happen in December, but both fighters got exposed to COVID, Ubali and Donaire. There was that random Donaire's going to retire, which it was an April Fool's thing, but it was like, well, he could really retire, dude. I mean, he might retire after this fight. You never know. But Ubali and Donaire is a fun fight. I thought that was one of the better fights on paper for the Showtime schedule that they released last summer into the fall. But that sounds like sources say, this is Dan Raphael, May 29th on Showtime. So both of those fights, sign me up for both of those fights. I really like those fights. So I'll just close on some more fight news and boxing Twitter stuff, just kind of having fun with it like I normally do. RIP to Jamal Hilton, who passed away from a car accident March 28th. This is from Boxing Rec Ray, talented fighter who got to 22-0 and decided to walk away from boxing. RIP. That's rough, man. That's tough. Okay, here's a tweet. Loma is a perfect example of how people will hype you up, then turn their back on you when you fall. Loma lost versus Lopez, and rightfully so, but he's still one of the most gifted fighters of this area. Glory Hunter's already jumped off the bandwagon. Yes, I mean, a lot of times these guys get so hyped up that it builds up this layer of, seriously? You know? Like, why are you comparing to that? Can't he just be a great fighter and let him prove it more? And so they overdo it. And so some of boxing Twitter will be like, dude, shut up. But then there's other parts of that, you know, that will just all of a sudden swarm on Loma like, oh, see, he wasn't shit, as if he lost a fight like 10-2 or something, you know? So, yeah, he makes a good point there. This is talking about welterweight, the welterweight division, Spence and Crawford. Honestly, I'm over it already. It feels like spoiled milk. I'm ready for the new class of welterweights coming up. Interest on the fight expired. It's both their faults, Spence and Crawford. It would have been great for the sport, possibly career-high paydays for GOAT, but they squandered the opportunity as if one of them just got knocked out or something. And mind you, Manny Pacquiao got knocked out by my guy, and then years later, fought Floyd. So let's calm down. And this is what I'm talking about. This is what I'm talking about with Mike Coppinger. I'll never sit there and say any of these guys aren't good at their jobs. He breaks a lot of stories. He's damn good at his job. But this shit is getting ridiculous. So this is what he said November 27th, 2020, as far as Tyson Jones, Triller, right? I couldn't possibly be less excited for Tyson Jones. Great to see two legends make their money, but if you buy this pay-per-view tomorrow expect to see a real fight, well, that's on you. However, I'm pumped about a different fight. So he's ripping the fight, but then now he's part of the Triller team, so now he's out there pumping it. Now he's out there, you know, pumping up Teofimo and Kambosos on pay-per-view. That's the type of shit. Like, seriously, dude? Like, talk about contradicting, dude. Mayweather-Canelo was not a domination. If you watch the fight, the whole fight, and not a minute 45 highlight, you'll all share after a Canelo win. Even less when, I don't know what this is saying, someone sent this to me, but he basically said that that wasn't a dominant performance, and it was much closer. Much closer. You just got to watch the whole fight. It's like, that's right. I only did watch 3.5 rounds. I forgot about that. So here's somebody saying to Shakur Stevenson, because Shakur said over my dead body as far as the unification, because he's next up for the belt. Why not let them unify and you're first in line for the two belts instead of having to go get both belts? A guy who beats the winner of two champions will catapult you, bro. But, and I said this, why the hell are you taking two paychecks out of Stevenson's pocket? So it won't count if he gets both of them? If he fights both champions, he's got to wait for them to fight and then fight them? I don't think that makes sense. Oh, by the way, someone sent me this too. I forgot. You know, we sit there and, talk some shit about Fox and how Fox is really up and down with the Crawford highlight. Sometimes he's in there, sometimes not. Sometimes they just say PBC champions and contenders, right? Other times they have him in there. Well, if you look at the rankings during that fight, they have Davis as a WBA champ, but he's not in the top 10 at 130. They have Oscar Valdez, Joseph Diaz Jr., Kevin Farmer, Herring, Burchelt at 5, Iota at 6, Alvarado 7, Concio at 8, and then Leo Santa Cruz at 9, and Lamont Roach Jr. at 10. So Gervonta, the top 10 ESPN rankings. And it's funny because Kriegel made a big deal. Like, you're trying to disappear Crawford as if he's like he doesn't exist. It's like, well, dude, I mean, so Gervonta's not a top 10 130 pounder. I mean, his last fight was at 130, so you can't use that excuse. And they list him. They list him at 130 as the champ in the fine print, you know, as one of the champs, WBA. But it's like, whoa, okay, I see. Here's something that is kind of interesting about Shakur. Shakur should have taken a Warrington fight. I don't understand how you turn down that unification, take that strap, then move up to 130 as the big dog. I don't know if that'd make you a big. Now you're just another high-risk, low-reward fight. When tabbed as that, you got to take advantage of opportunities like Warrington. Imagine Floyd turning down Gotti. Floyd understood he was the better fighter, but B-side and took the fight and beat the dog shit out of him. Totally different mindset today, whining, complaining about everybody's ducking people, but then you're not going to take the fights. I did think I didn't like how, like, it's one thing to say they didn't give you enough money to go overseas and fight. I get that part. Maybe they didn't. But he was saying they're ducking. Well, they are offering you. Warrington offered $1 million to Russell, too, you know. So, yeah, I mean, that could have been one of your guys' knockout, but you didn't take it. You're still in the young mode. Now, Russell, that's a little different. We'll see what he does. But, you know, I mean, he could have had a lineal title off of that. Stating facts here, if Crawford beats Pacquiao, the idea of Spence getting 50% of the pot in a unification fight becomes laughable. Crawford would obviously deserve the majority of the pot at that point. So, you're cool with Spence getting it though right now, or are you saying only that once Crawford beats Pacquiao? We'd obviously have to see the numbers and whatnot, but that's kind of why I want to see the Pacquiao fight, to get a bigger name, you know, to get a bigger name. I'd love Crawford to get that fight. We'll see. I mean, it's Tuesday now. Remember last week, Bob said he's going to announce it. So, you know, we'll see. I hope for the best. Here's Adrian Broner. We'll close the show on another Adrian Broner IG rant. And some of this stuff I say, well, then go do what you're saying. Some of it I don't want him to do. Some of it just him on IG. This is just Broner. But he says, he at Showtime Boxing, he says, stop playing. I know y'all paid me good and I love you and Al, but I got goals and I want and needs. And right now I'm on some bullshit where they trying to take everything from me and all I know is how to fight my way out of it or shoot my way out of it. We all know y'all don't want me to start picking up guns back up. Let's get this money. So the only thing at this point in time in your life is either you box or you pick up guns. Now that's just the IG post. That's just how he does IG. I don't think that, you know, if you were down to your last little bit of money, that has nothing to do with Al or, you know, Espinoza. Anyway, he said, I told Al and Espinoza to keep me busy, not dizzy. I want fights and I want to train to keep my body right. Well, you can train to keep your body right. But anyway, he says, you know, he doesn't want to be taking my, you know, grinding his body down, which, you know, if you're in a camp, that's different, but you don't get as much wear and tear if you're not in full camp mode. You do got to stay in shape because that's part of the reason why, you know, you had to, you missed weight. Man, didn't perform, couldn't perform in certain fights because you weren't serious. So some of this, a lot of this is you, bro. But this is where he says, you know, he doesn't want to put his body in the gym through hell for nothing. And I understand that. They about to make me go to Triller or ESPN or something because I'm not in a contract with nobody. I'm just loyal, mother effer. What, y'all don't want me active? What, you don't want me to make 100 or 200 million? Let's go. I want to fight, bruh. Keep playing. I'm going to go punch somebody in the street. I'm tired of this shit. But to say that Al Haymon and Espinoza are stopping you from making $100 or $200 million is just asinine. I mean, why don't you contact Triller? I mean, Teofimo did. So why don't you do that then? What's stopping you, dude? What's stopping you? Like, stop blaming people. I mean, both these dudes could have cut you off a long time ago. It's just, but that's IG post. That's how it goes. Anyway, enjoy the fights this weekend. We'll definitely be back with that American boxing kind of in their prime, becoming contenders and prospects because it's deep. We'll be back next week. Enjoy the fights. Peace.
Once you become the world champion, I believe that you feel